from his studios in New York. It's time for Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora, where sports meets life. Here's your host, Dan Tortora.
Welcome here to Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora on WakeUpCallDT.com, your one-stop sports shop, and MixLR.com/WakeUpCallDT. If you haven't become a member of both, make sure you do so now. They're free. They literally cost you nothing. Not free with subscription or free with whatever. It's free. People say that nothing in life is free anymore. Well, I like to prove those people wrong. So go to WakeUpCallDT.com to the homepage and subscribe or become a member for free. That will automatically include you in whenever I do anything like fantasy football, flag football, March Madness. You'll get the initial invitations. We'll also have a newsletter coming up shortly that I'm very excited about. I know we've talked about that for a while. And some other things that we're going to be doing just to say thank you for every one of you that is involved. And you have access to the whole website. So WakeUpCallDT.com. Make sure you become a free member by going to the homepage right now. You can also become a member of MixLR.com/WakeUpCallDT. That's MixLR.com/WakeUpCallDT. Listening in, you can do that from anywhere, but becoming a member gives you two things that nobody else has. Number one, you can live chat with me during the show. Number two, you'll be emailed every single time the show goes live, so you'll never miss a live show again. You'll always know when I'm on the air. And it's very simple, it's very easy, and it's a lot of fun. You wake up in the morning, it'll say Dan Tortora is live, would you like to listen? You click yes, and that will bring you straight to my feed, and you will not miss a moment of the show, of the interviews, of the special segments like Annoying Moment of the Week, like the morning menu of the Market Diner, and of course, over 700 sports figures. You won't miss an opportunity to hear from each of those sports figures as numbers continue to grow and as we continue to grow the show. I want to thank everyone that's ever listened in, everyone that's ever went to CallDT on Twitter, Facebook.com/WakeUpCallDT, YouTube.com/WakeUpCallDT, Instagram @WakeUpCall_DT, and everybody that's been on the website, WakeUpCallDT.com, like I was saying. So I want to thank you all, those that download the app, over 94,000 show downloads, which isn't the amount of plays, because you can play the show without downloading it. So over 94,000 downloads, which means that those plays have already gone past a record that I truly cannot be more thankful for. 94,000 downloads are amazing. And the plays being even more than that is just wonderful. And that's because of you, and I thank you for that. So you can download Wake Up Call DT free app by going to wakeupcalldt.podbean.com/mobile. That's wakeupcalldt.podbean.com/mobile. MOBILE. So now you know all the ways to connect with the show. I'm very happy to be here on Monday morning, August 22nd, on the road back to Syracuse, New York. Got some interviews to do today. Looking forward to that. But before I get to that, I want to say thank you to a good friend of mine, John, and his wife, Irina, for their opportunity for my wife and I to be able to go to their wedding. It meant a lot to me. As you know, Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora is where sports meets life. And sports fans all across the country and the world get married every day. And I'm very, very happy to say that I was able to be a part of the wedding of someone who lived two doors down from me my freshman year of college at Marywood University. And now almost 10 years later, not only are John and I friends, but Steve, Brandon, John's brother Mark, all of us connecting with each other, Elisa, all connecting with each other, and her, I know she hopes, soon-to-be husband being around there as well, and Steve maybe walking down that aisle. So we're all kind of growing up, and things are happening, and all good things, and I thank God for that. But it's great to get the crew back together, and that truly meant a lot to me. So I just want to put out another congratulations to John and Irina, who had the best snacks of any wedding I've been to, who had friggin' candy there at their weddings, and great music, and we danced for a very long time. And my wife is an amazing dancer, so I had a lot of fun with her. So I want to thank John and Arena for that. I also want to put a shout out to my baby nephew. So I know that right now he probably has no idea what I'm doing or what a show is or anything like that. But baby Eli, who just turned 11 months old, he will be a full year in September. I love you. Thanks for hanging out with your uncle and your aunt. And, you know, I can't appreciate enough being an uncle. So I thank Brandon and Kirsten for allowing me to be that and allowing my wife to be an aunt to the best baby in the world. I'm just going to put it out there now. Until I have my own, that is the best. So baby Eli, we spent a lot of time together. We laughed together. We had some deep conversation. And we danced better than anybody else on the dance floor. And I will challenge you all right now. So thank you to Eli for spending some time with me. And your uncle loves you. And when you are old enough to understand what the heck I'm doing, hopefully you'll appreciate your shout-out when you're 11 months old. Here on Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora on wakeupcalldt.com, as well as mixlr.com/wakeupcalldt. As you know it, every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 9 a.m. to noon Eastern time, I'm here with you live on the feed. You can listen on your desktop, your laptop, your tablet, your iPad, your iPod, your iPhone, your any device that has the internet. So, not your pager. If you have a pager, you have to upgrade. It's time, Dad. It's time. Flip phone, it's time. But any other way, you can listen into the show. As you know, the morning menu is always a part of the show. Proudly presented by the Market Diner on 2100 Park Street in Syracuse, New York. In the regional market, across from Destiny USA, right by the movie theater, by the bus and train station, by the market, by the Syracuse Chiefs, off of major highways. It literally is the center of where you need to be. And it's an extremely easy place to get to. And when you're running errands, it's a great place to stop in, say hi, and get something to eat. That is the Market Diner on 2100 Park Street in Syracuse, New York, in the regional market, across from Destiny USA. And in my opinion, one of the best places that Central New York has to offer. And of course, they have the Dan Tortora Special, which you can get at any time, Monday through Sunday. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner, Monday through Saturday, you can get it. And on Sunday, they close a little bit earlier, so make sure you pop in there after church or going to the market, wherever you're doing on a Sunday. Or you just wake up late, want to run over there. Make sure that you go and try the Dan Tortora Special. It's been a hot commodity since it came out in January 2016. And that's because you're awesome, Central New York. So I thank you for that. And you can make sure you go out and get it. It is a bacon, egg, and cheese omelet inside of a Belgian waffle, warmed up, a little bit of powdered sugar, and surrounding that bacon, egg, and cheese. It is a phenomenal sandwich that you can cut up and eat with syrup, or you can pick it up like a sandwich, or like one of my friends said, why can't you pick it up like a sandwich and put syrup on it? And that's a sticky situation, but we all do what we love, and who am I to judge? So make sure that you try the Dan Tortora Special today. And I greatly appreciate everyone that has. So thank you for that. In the morning menu, proudly presented by the Market Diner, today's show, we're going to be going through the NFL. The Olympics rounded up. They finished up. So we're going to discuss a few things about the Olympics, kind of a broad scope of that. We'll take a look at the NFL. And like I said, for sports fans anywhere, for NFL fans, football fans, fantasy football owners, the preseason is extremely important. And so we'll get into that, and we'll get into some of the players that stood out to me. And then, of course, at 10 a.m., like we do every single Monday show, 10 a.m. Eastern time, you'll hear Covering the Bases of Life with Jorge Maduro. He is a former Syracuse Chiefs player. He is also someone that was in the New York Yankees organization, and he's a Hall of Famer with the Miami Hurricanes, where he played collegiate baseball. He'll be on the show at 10 a.m. Eastern time for Covering the Bases of Life, where we take sports and we bond it with life, and we teach life lessons, life goals, and help you out, whether you're an athlete or not, in that segment, Covering the Bases of Life. And, of course, after that, as I promised you, from 10:30 a.m. to the end of the show, you'll hear from Rob Drummond tonight. Rob Drummond is Syracuse alum, the last time Syracuse went undefeated. He reminded everybody of that at the Willow Street Foundation Golf Tournament. The last time that Syracuse went undefeated, he was their running back in the late 80s. And Rob Drummond will be on the show with me, as he's been so many times, one of my closest friends and one of the best people I know, most loyal people I know, most honest people that I know. yeah, he was good at Syracuse. And yeah, his career professionally in the NFL with the Philadelphia Eagles and the CFL, where he was able to go to both sides of Canada and kick butt wherever he went. Yes, he has the accolades, he has the credentials to be marked down as one of the best players to ever come out of Syracuse of any sport. But in my opinion, he's one of the best people to come out of Syracuse, and that holds more weight to me. He'll be joining me to preview the entire 2016 Syracuse football season. We are going to be discussing a broad scope of the team. We are going to give our predictions of the entire Coastal Division. We're going to give our predictions of the entire Atlantic Division, 1 through 7, 1 being the top team, 7 being the worst. And we will take a look at every single position on the field. I wanted to say floor and court because I'm very tired. So not floor, not court, field or turf, however you fancy, on the grass. We will be discussing every single Syracuse position on offense, defense, and special teams. Who's to look out for? Who's the catalyst? Who's the, you know, the first person that comes to mind at each position? We're going to be discussing that. So our Syracuse football primer for 2016, which was recorded at Orange Crate Express. We did a live show out there for the community. If you missed it, you weren't the first one to hear it, but I'm nice enough to put it on here for you. Make sure that the next time we do a live event, though, you're out there with everybody else that was out. I want to thank everybody I got to meet at the Orange Crate Express on 309 East Seneca Street. Truly meant a lot in Manlius, New York. Just really nice people. I met a business owner that was a couple doors down, and I met fans that knew about, you know, what we were doing, and I met new fans. And that's the thing about me. I don't believe that everybody in the world has heard my show. Would I like everybody in the world to hear my show? Yeah. But I've come to terms with the fact that you have to grow. You have to work hard. You have to believe in yourself. And you have to stay humble. And the day that I have 1 million listeners, I'm going to treat it like the day I had one. And the day I had one, I believed it could have been 1 million. It could have been 1,000. I was like, I don't know how many people are listening. But you do your job every single day as if God is listening, because he is. And if you do it that way, then it works out. And I know that we live in a world where everything is PC, and you can't say God, and we can't talk about religion, and we can't talk about sex and orientation and whatever. But I'm here to tell you today that I literally will accept any single person in this world, regardless of any background, sexual orientation, ethnicity, whatever. It doesn't matter to me. As long as you're a good person. I'm not going to accept a bad person into my life, but good people, absolutely. And me, as someone who I consider to be good, and I've worked my butt off to be a good person for 30 plus years, I will tell you without a doubt that I believe that God exists. I love God. And if you have a problem with that, then shut off my station and don't listen to me. But outside of that, to everybody else who's smart, thank you for listening into the show. Because I believe in God, I love God, and I will not back away from that. And to be a broadcaster and know that so many people in the media are spreading hate, talk about the devil, talk about all these terrible things, they're focusing on the negative, they're twisting stories, they're lying to you, they're cheating you. That stuff is bad. Coming up and saying, hey, it's Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora, and I love God and you should too. However you view him or her, that's one of the best things I think you can say in the world that we live in today. So I love God. I thank him for this opportunity. And when I say him, I'm not being discriminatory. It's just a figure of speech. But I really do appreciate God. And I appreciate every opportunity that he gives me. And I thank him for being able to do what I do and to humble me. As my company continues to grow every single year, and it will always grow because I'm behind it and he's behind it, and you know, we'll go from there. But anybody that's going through any hard times this morning or having a rough go at it or having a great day, you're all welcome to the show always. And as long as you're respectful opinion and you're respectful, you can always talk to me. If you're a mean person, I'm not going to talk to you. Because if I saw you in the street, why would I talk to you? So why would I talk to you online? And if you don't justify your opinion, it's hard for me to have a conversation with you. So make sure you justify it. make sure you're nice. It goes a long way. And just a forewarning, if you're a troll on the internet, you're not going to ever hear back from me. You're going to be lonely just like you are. You're fighting for attention, and you're not going to get it from me. So I really do, you know, in the world that we live in today, the wedding this weekend and seeing my nephew and being around my wife and not, you know, having to work constantly and whatnot, it really did remind me of a lot of things. So I proudly come to you this morning and say, I fear God and no man, and I'm very, very thankful to be sitting in the seat that I'm sitting in. And thank you for helping me to do that, because listeners are a huge part of what I do. So here on today's show, like I said, we're going to cover the Olympics, we're going to talk the NFL, and then 10 a.m. Eastern time, Jorge Maduro will be on to do Covering the Bases of Life with me. He's going to be a special guest for that segment, as he is every Monday at 10 a.m. Eastern time. And then after that, we're going to go into the Syracuse football primer, which I'm very, very excited to be doing. Like I said, we're going to be covering everything Syracuse football. We're going to be talking about each position. We're going to be covering the entire ACC. Rob's going to predict the order of finish for the Coastal Division and the Atlantic. I'm going to do the same. It's going to be awesome, so you got to make sure that you listen into it. It is a truly deep conversation about Syracuse, about what we know, about what our expectations are, and it's very, very important for you to listen to. So any Syracuse sports fan, this is your spot. Any NFL fan, any college football fan, any sports fan in general, this is your spot. That Syracuse primer was a lot of fun to do with Rob live on site at Orange Crate Express, and I am extremely happy to be re-airing it for you. Those of you that couldn't make it, those of you that are out of town, I'm so happy to be bringing it to you today. So that's the morning menu, proudly presented by the Market Diner. Let's get into it. I'm impatient. As far as the Olympics go, I got to talk about it. So you know how I felt about the Olympics. I love the Olympics. It's one of the only things that brings every country in this every country in the world that is allowed to participate. It brings us all together. So I love it. If I was an athlete and I could go out there and I'm seeing teams from all over the world and I get to meet people from all over the world, I'm an ambassador to the United States in that moment. If never again, in that moment I am. And if our politicians can't bring peace, which they've shown that they can't, then it's our job to do so. It's our job to sit and talk and shake hands and spend time with people around the world. And the Olympics helps us to have that, you know, world breakfast, so to speak, where everybody gets to sit at the same table. Nobody's sitting at a higher table or a lower table. We're all sitting at one long table together. And you can talk to whoever you want. And those are the moments that I appreciate. So for the Olympics being the long table where we all get to break bread together, that is what I thank them for. What I am not happy with in Rio this year was going to a place where the economy is in shambles, the government is going back and forth, social fabric is having issues, the Zika virus was spreading, building venues and sewage treatment and all these issues, not having enough food, and different things that are going on. These are the issues that I had. Because you have plenty of time to take care of this. We know in 2020 that the Olympics are going to be in Tokyo, Japan. So Tokyo has 4 years to prepare. So Rio had 4 years to prepare. And in 4 years to prepare, minimum, they didn't take care of business. They didn't do what needed to be done. And that, to me, is heartbreaking, and it's sad, and it's dangerous for the people that are there. Now, Ryan Lochte, I'm not going to get into that, and the stupidity and the ridiculousness. All I'm going to say is, I don't know what it is with the swim team, but Michael Phelps, Ryan Lochte, I don't get it. I mean, this is one of the best teams, if not the best team next to basketball, that the U.S. can boast of in the Olympics. And they make the United States look great in the same moment that they make the United States look terrible. So, Lochte, lock it up, get it together, and let's remember that you're not representing yourself. You're representing this country. And when you do something stupid in somebody else's country, that country thinks that we're all stupid. So please, make sure that the next time you jump in a pool and get out, yes, you won a gold medal, yes, your team did well, but what you do on land is just important, if not more important, than what you did in the water. And if you're going to just be a water person and you're only going to do the right thing in the water, then transform yourself into a fish, stay in the water, and don't bother anybody on land. Because I can't take or deal with athletes that are representing this country or any country that would lie about an incident and that would embarrass the entire United States. So Ryan Lochte, I am putting you on the hot seat right now because you need to get it together. It's not just about, I swim really well, so then screw the world. You need to do the right thing. You need to be smarter. There are people watching you, and there are people that are stupid enough to follow your path. So make sure that you do the right thing the next chance you get, which is this morning, and so I'm hoping the best for you. Besides that, the Zika virus, this was a big issue for me because you got the whole world going to a place where the Zika virus is. When you have the whole world going there, and I've talked about it before, so I'm not gonna go crazy with this right now and double up on what I said about it, but just a short note, you bring the whole world to a place of a virus by putting the Olympics in Rio. You could essentially be taking the Zika virus and making it a pandemic, spreading it all over the world. And that to me is the definition of stupidity above anything else. How you could put everyone from countries all over the world in harm's way. So that to me is an issue, and that to me needs to change. There needs to be checks and balances. And like I said before, if the NBA All-Star Game could say, we're not going to Charlotte because we don't agree with the bills that they pass in their state government, then why the heck are we sending the whole world to a place with a virus? If we can say no to a place because we don't like a bill, then why can't we say no to a place about the survival of the human race and making sure that there's not birth defects with our children? It seems completely crazy that we can all come together and agree, oh, Charlotte, we're not going to go to Charlotte. We don't like your ideas and your views. So we're going to go to Rio, and we're going to put ourselves in danger, and our children in danger, and our future children in danger, and our country's in danger. That seems very stupid. And like I said before, my wife is the most supportive person in the world. Next to my grandmother, most supportive person in the world. My mom, most supportive person. When you look at my wife and everything that she... I mean, I have the life of a coach for all intents and purposes. I have the life of a coach. I'm on the road. I was in 4 cities in 4 weeks earlier this year. I was just in 4 cities in 4 weeks between July and August. And what does my wife do? She loves me. She calls me. She FaceTimes me. She texts me all throughout the day. And she gives me a huge hug and a kiss and misses me every moment I'm gone, loves me when I come back, and is always supportive of me. If I told her I was going down to Zika virus town, my wife would be like, mm-mm. And that's probably one of the only times I'd ever hear mm-mm. But I would say mm-mm with her too, because why put myself in harm's way? So Tokyo, you have 4 years to make sure that your buildings are adequate, that there's no bugs in them or rodents in them or leaks in them, that there's enough food for everybody, that the areas that you build are safe, that the people can wander outside of the outskirts of their compound and not worry about being in harm's way. That the economy and different things, I know you can't affect everything, but at least put some plans in place. And those that decide where the Olympics are every single time that these Olympics are held, let me say this to you. If you have another situation like a Russia or a Rio, it is okay to tell them that you're not coming there until they get their you-know-what together. Because safety comes first. Health comes first. Happiness and everybody being able to feel comfortable comes first. And that's the most important thing. If Rio's going through trouble, there was no reason to have it there. Now, America's going through trouble, so you could argue it this way and say, well, Dan, why should America have it? And I could see your argument with that. We have to go somewhere with the Olympics that is safe, healthy, and ready for the opportunities. And if we can't do that, then we need to figure out another course of action or how to make it done. Make everything get done in a proper way, because you can't put people in harm's way just to have an Olympics somewhere because somebody's vying for it or whatever it may be. So that's all I'm going to say about it. I didn't like those things about Rio. I did like the fact that the Olympics, as always, brought people together. I do want to make a note here of the sports that were featured in the Olympics, because this is insanity. I'm going to mention the sports that we know mainstream, and then I'm going to mention the lesser-known sports. Basketball, field hockey, you know, Syracuse, very mainstream. Swimming, boxing, golf, rugby, soccer, tennis, volleyball, wrestling, gymnastics. Now I'm going to name the longer list of sports that you probably don't watch every week. Archery, cycling, handball, which is usually a penalty in soccer, rowing, shooting, which there's a lot of in America, but not for sports, taekwondo, weightlifting, athletics, equestrian, which is horseback riding for those playing the home game, judo, canoe, fencing, modern pentathlon, triathlon, which, yes, a lot of us know, table tennis, sailing, water polo, and my fave, badminton. So those are the sports that were at this year's Olympics, which is crazy. Craziness. That many sports at this year's Olympics. We're talking about 29 sports at the 2016 Summer Olympics. 29 different sports. Absolutely amazing. And still, bobsledding is one of my favorites. And I know it's in the winter, but bobsledding is. It's bobsledding. I love it so much. I think when it comes to the Olympics, you got to watch sports that aren't just the ones that you know. And so in the case of like badminton or bobsled, I mean, those are the things that I like to watch. I like to watch things that are different. And I like to watch things that are difficult. Not that they all don't have their own, you know, skill and difficulty, but, you know, rugby, people are killing each other. It's terrifying because it's football without pads, which makes it very scary. So everybody that's like, I don't know if I want my children to play football because it's not safe. Well, rugby is terrifying. So rugby is like a bad dream of a football player. But I also give credit to a lot of those athletes that they can eat and walk after they play rugby, because it is obviously a very dangerous sport to play. But when you look at the Olympics overall, this is no surprise, the top three. America won the most medals with 121. China was in second place that had 51 less medals with 70. And right behind them, Great Britain with 67. So the United States won the most medals by 51 medals of separation. The U.S. won the most gold medals with 46, the most silver medals with 37, and the most bronze medals with 38. Behind the U.S. in gold medals, U.S. had 46 once again. Great Britain had 27, China had 26. Silver, U.S. 37, Great Britain 23, China 18. Bronze, U.S. 38, China 26, Japan 21. So the United States led in every type of medal and in medals overall, and their degree of separation was pretty darn large, as they had 51 medals of separation to put them as the top medal winning country in the world. And China, usually they can play it and they can get pretty darn close, but in this one it was pretty much a landslide for the United States of America, the only country to get over 100 medals by far. So congrats to everybody that participated. I do want to show some love for everyone out there, because there are so many different countries. So I want to go to the full medal tracker and let you know where we're at here. So total medals by country. The United States had 121. China had 70. Great Britain had 67. Russia had 56. Germany had 42, which tied with France. Japan had 41. Australia had 29. Italy, shout out to MyHeritage, had 28. Canada had 22. Korea had 21. The Netherlands had 19. Brazil had 19. New Zealand had 18. And some of these countries, I'm sorry, their abbreviations do not make a lot of sense to me. So Spain, shout out to MyHeritage as well, had 17. And then we have Hungary with 15, Denmark with 15, Kenya with 13, Jamaica with 11, Cuba with 11, and the list goes on and on. Poland had 11, Ukraine had 11, and the least amount of medals went to so many countries. So the least amount of Finland had 1, and they were tied with a bunch of other countries with 1. Portugal and Nigeria all had 1, as well as I believe Trinidad had 1. So a lot of ties for 1, Israel with 1, Egypt with 1, and then you go all the way to the United States with 121. So pretty amazing, pretty crazy, but congratulations to every single country for participating. And if we can come together for the Olympics, hopefully we can realize that we can come together to make the bigger decisions in life. That would be the most important thing to do, is to remember that should be our focus, and that should be of importance to us. So I want to thank the Olympics once again. The United States killing it in men's basketball, and they went 5-0 in men's basketball, which is pretty amazing for them. They did a great job, and they obviously, you know, took home the gold medal, which is expected of the United States every single time around. So the United States with Carmelo Anthony, who is now the all-time leading scorer, who continued to tack on points after that, the all-time leading scorer for men's basketball ever for the U.S. Olympic team. He continued to do what he did all the way through, and a congratulations to the men's team for their victory and for what they were able to do. They were able to defeat Serbia in the championship game, and I want to give them a congratulations and a nod for that. That was a huge victory for them, and a big congratulations for them, and a congratulations for women's basketball for all they did for the Olympics, and for all the teams around the country and the world for the hard work that they put in all the way through. A big congratulations, because it is. I mean, to win a gold medal is a truly, truly amazing thing. I mean, I don't think you could say enough about winning a gold medal and what that must feel like. And not many people get to feel something like that. I mean, you look at the representation from each country, and it's not easy to get in there, but when you do, it's a truly amazing thing. So it's wonderful, and it's a huge congratulations. I mean, the team had so many amazing players on there. And even though they had an amazing roster for the U.S. men's basketball team, they didn't have LeBron James, Stephen Curry, Russell Westbrook, James Harden, Anthony Davis, Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, Kawhi Leonard, LaMarcus Aldridge, Damian Lillard, and even more outside of that. Paul George, who I got to interview when he was a rookie, plays for the Pacers, put out something good for Carmelo, former Syracuse player that won the only national championship in the NCAA tournament with Syracuse, for Syracuse in 2003. He said, quote, "Melo's for sure the leader. He's the voice of the team," which is a big thing, end quote, that he had to say about Carmelo Anthony. So Carmelo Anthony, with being the career leading scorer ever for the U.S. Olympic team for men's basketball, also holds the record with most gold medals. He has 3 gold medals. So, first men's basketball player ever in Olympic history with 3 gold medals, which is absolutely and positively amazing for Carmelo Anthony. So I want to give him a shout out here. He leads the U.S. Olympic team for men's basketball in its entire history once again, with games played 31. Points, 336 is what he ended this year's Olympics with, total from all the Olympics he's played in, and rebounds with 125. So Carmelo Anthony has played the most games of any U.S. men's basketball player ever in the Olympics, with 31, most cumulative points over his time playing with 336, and 125 rebounds, and the most medals with three gold, or most gold medals, three of them, with the U.S. Olympic team for men's basketball. So a huge congratulations to Carmelo Anthony, who Syracuse fans have loved for so long, will always love, because he helped bring a championship to the city of Syracuse in central New York. And now he's brought three gold medals to the United States and set a bunch of records. So he's absolutely amazing in that respect. And I thank him for all of his hard work. And people say that he's a ball hog. And people say that, you know, Carmelo Anthony is somebody who only thinks of himself and doesn't think about anybody else. But you got to give this man credit, because they always say that he's never a leader. And helping America get three gold medals obviously shows some leadership. I do want to make a note here. Ecto Coors, who's a longtime listener of the show, he just asked me a question here on the live feed. We're going to check it right now. How does that compare to men globally? Well, I want to start off first here before we take a step aside and we take a look at global. I want to say Carmelo Anthony, over history, he has 336 points total. Kevin Durant has 311. LeBron James, 273. David Robinson, 270. Michael Jordan, 256. And Charles Barkley, 231. Those are the top six career point totals for anyone that's ever played for the U.S. men's basketball team in the Olympics. So Michael Jordan, the fifth best. Carmelo Anthony, the highest. Kevin Garnett is only 25 points behind that. That's one game. So if Carmelo Anthony is not playing again, that's something to look after right there. We'll take a step aside here on Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora on WakeUpCallDT.com, your one-stop sports shop. We'll get into the question that Ecto Coors asked after the break, and we'll be right back at it, speaking on the Olympics and getting into some NFL, where sports meets life, right here on WakeUpCallDT.com and MixLR.com/WakeUpCallDT.
Gear up with the real deal at Dreisig Apparel, creating what people are going to see and learn about you before they even meet you. Gear up for what you need for your team, business, or event. To look professional, look good, and feel good, outfit yourself at DreisigApparel.com. That's DreisigApparel.com. Apparel.com. The only place to gear up with the real deal.
Serving the Central New York community for over six decades, the Penn and Trophy Center, located on 111 East Willow Street in Syracuse, New York, is your home for custom engraving of plaques, awards, trophies, clocks, watches, as well as personalized gifts, sports awards, and so much more. When it comes to finding the right gift for anyone in your family, on your team, or in your business, the Penn and Trophy Center is the place to go. 111 East Willow Street in Syracuse, New York. Call now to set up an appointment, 315-422-8797. That's 315-422-8797. Or stop in at 111 East Willow Street in Syracuse, New York. And to see more from Penn and Trophy Center, go to pennandtrophy.com. That's pennandtrophy.com.
What's the universal language of a fan? Clapping your hands. With Fan Hands, the ultimate sports fan accessory, find your team color, slip them on, and start cheering on your favorite team with 11 different colors always in stock on FanHands.com, where you'll find the ultimate sports fan accessory. Real fans wear Fan Hands.
This is Mike, your trainer at Precy Speed School on 7201 Jones Road in Baldensville, inside CNY Family Sports Center. Adult classes run in the evenings, Monday through Friday. Call 315-635-5019 to sign up. That's 315-635-5019.
I'm George Townsend of Honda City with some good advice when buying a new car. The true cost of owning a new car is determined by the appraised value when you trade it. No vehicle appraises higher than a Honda. Next, look for low APRs and deep discounts. You also want low maintenance costs and great fuel economy. That's why my advice to you is to buy a new Honda. Looking pre-owned, visit our Honda Certified Used Car Center. Honda City, 7140 Henry Clay Boulevard, Liverpool, or HondaCity-CNY.com.
It would be a pity if you don't shop.
Welcome back here to Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora on WakeUpCallDT.com, your one-stop sports shop, and MixLR.com/WakeUpCallDT. And a question that was asked before the break by one of my listeners, longtime listener Ecto Coors, he asked me how Carmelo Anthony's numbers compared to men globally for what I believe Ecto Coors was saying. When you look at the Olympics and every country, you know, who's the closest, so to speak, to Carmelo Anthony? And one of the players that I found here is actually connected to Brazil. And that would be, so we look right here, in the 1988 Summer Olympics, his name is Oscar Schmidt, and Ecto Coors said correct, so how do they line up? 1988 Summer Olympics, Oscar Schmidt, who played for the Brazilian national team, I'm going to make a note here, he scored 335 points in the 1988 Summer Olympics for an average of just under 42 points per game. 1992, he scored 198 points in 8 games. 1996, he scored 219 points in 8 games. So in 38 career Olympic basketball games, Schmidt has a record of 1,094 points for a 28.8 points per game average. So Carmelo Anthony is the best in the United States, but the greatest of all time looks to be Oscar Schmidt with his numbers. He played in the 1980, 84, 88, 92, 96 Summer Olympics, and he put together 1,094 points, which is just under 30 points per game. So to answer your question, Ecto Coors, the irony of having the Olympics in Brazil, in Rio, in 2016, and having Oscar Schmidt as part of the opening ceremony, and then everybody giving all the accolades and all the respect to Carmelo Anthony of the United States, is that Carmelo Anthony's number is almost 700 lower. Yeah, it is 700 lower, over 700 lower than Oscar Schmidt. So Oscar Schmidt, 1,094 points. If you take that 1,094 and you subtract 336 that were scored by Carmelo Anthony, Carmelo's 758 points behind, being the highest scoring Olympic player in the sport of men's basketball in the world. He's behind Oscar Schmidt by 758 points. So all of this focus in the spotlight on Carmelo Anthony in the United States for how great he is and how much he's done and how wonderful he was in the Olympics and how wonderful he's been and the records he set is kind of, you know, takes a huge back seat if you look at Oscar Schmidt and say 1,094 points. It's insane. So he is the all-time leading scorer in the FIBA World Cup as well with 843 points in 33 games. So Oscar Schmidt, 1,094 points, that would make him the GOAT by 758 points of separation between him and Carmelo Anthony. So again, we're all talking about Carmelo Anthony and giving respect to Carmelo Anthony and, you know, boosting up Carmelo Anthony and how great he is in the United States, which is wonderful for the United States. He set a record for the United States, but the world record looks to belong to Oscar Schmidt of Brazil. So, Ecto Coors, great question, because that's something that I definitely would say, I mean, that people don't know, and that isn't readily made available. So, congratulations to Carmelo Anthony, and a huge congratulations to Oscar Schmidt, and you're going to get a shout-out on my show, because that's kind of flying low on the radar, so to speak. So, Oscar Schmidt, over 1,000 points. You know, that's saying something. That's saying, Carmelo, great, great job. There's a long way to go, though. I mean, that's a long way to go. You look at Michael Jordan, scored 200-something. So, I mean, he got beat out by over 800 points by Oscar Schmidt. So, Oscar Schmidt, I mean, now, granted, Carmelo's played in 4 Olympics. And, you know, you look at the fact that Oscar Schmidt played in a bunch more. But still, You know, it's a great feat for Carmelo Anthony, for the United States. And overall, if we're looking at the world, Oscar Schmidt of Brazil has some bragging rights if he chooses to use them. That is my take on the Olympics and a little background in support of the Olympics. Once again, thank you to Ecto Coors. I love it when listeners broaden my horizon and the horizon of the people listening. So thank you for the question that forced me to dig, that forced us to learn something today. Ecto Coors, you're awesome. Continuing on here in the morning menu, proudly presented by the Market Diner on 2100 Park Street in Syracuse, New York, in the region market across from Destiny USA. He said thank you to me. Oh, how nice of you, Mr. Ecto Coors. So, and Ecto Cooler, by the way, I got it in a can. Hi-C Ecto Cooler. I went to Nickel City Con in Buffalo. I did a ton of great interviews for my other show, Larger Than Life with Dan Tortora, that you can hear on largerthanlifedt.webs.com. That's largerthanlifedt.webs.com, W-E-B-S.com. So make sure you check it out. I have so many interviews coming up, and I got Ecto Cooler when I was there. And every time I see Ecto Core's name, that's what it makes me think of. So thank you. I appreciate it. Continuing on with the morning menu, proudly presented by the Market Diner on 2100 Park Street in Syracuse, New York, in the regional market across from Destiny USA. Like I said, I wanted to get into the NFL. We did this last Monday when I went through the preseason games and kind of let you know, or last week I should say, kind of let you know what was going on, some players that stuck out to me. And I'm going to do that quick here with each of these teams before we get into the 10 a.m. live covering the bases of life with Jorge Maduro, who is a former Syracuse Chief and a Hall of Famer for the University of Miami. We'll get into that in just a few minutes. But before we go there, I want to make a note of players you should be looking out for, because guess what? The Fantasy Football Draft, so the Wake Up Call Fantasy Football Challenge, start this week. Tuesday, August 23rd, we'll have our first draft at Saltine Warrior Sports Pub at 7 p.m. After that, we will have a draft next Tuesday, August 30th, at 7:30 p.m. That'll be followed by our Labor Day weekend drafts on Saturday, September 3rd at 2 p.m. and Saturday and Sunday, September 4th at 7:30 p.m. So, if you haven't signed up yet, I can still squeeze you in a couple spots here. We got about 40 owners in Central New York, because Central New York is amazing. We have a group of 14, 7 years strong in Orlando, Florida, because Orlando, Florida is amazing. And we bridge the gap there and bring it all together in my coverage of the ACC, Orlando Magic, the NBA, Orlando Summer League, the Jacksonville Jaguars, the NFL as a whole, and of course, fantasy football and the American Athletic Conference. So I want to thank Orlando, Florida for staying true to me. And I want to thank Central New York for welcoming me back home a few years back and building one league into two, two into four. I love you all. I can't thank you all enough. So Ecto Coors and everybody else who hasn't signed up for Wake Up Call Fantasy Football, if you want to get in, it's free to join. There's a Lombardi Trophy that is on the line from Penn and Trophy Center if you want to win it. You don't have to pay to join. You're going to have perks at Saltine Warrior Sports Pub all throughout the season. There's great drinks and great food there. It's a great atmosphere. It's right by the dome. It's absolutely amazing. It's by Clinton Square for when you go ice skating and check out the tree and get some hot chocolate. And on top of all of that, it is the home of the Fantasy Football Live Drafts, which is an experience unlike anything else you're going to have in Central New York. I like to do it up big, get you all in the war room, and I play with each of the leagues. So I go up against everyone in Central New York every single week. I'm going up against somebody different in four different leagues. So it's imperative that you join because, like I said, it's free. You get perks at Saltine Warrior Sports Pub. You get to call Saltine Warrior Sports Pub your home when it comes to fantasy football. You get to come out for a live draft. We're going to have watch parties. We're going to be doing things all season long. Before, we just did the live draft, and then I saw you at the Super Bowl. Now we're going to do the live drafts, and I'm going to see you all season long. You can hang out with me, pick my brain about Syracuse football, basketball, whatever it may be, the NFL, and we're just going to be able to sit there, have a drink, get some food, and relax with one another. So, if you haven't joined one of the best things you have in Central New York, you're crazy. do it now. Wake Up Call Fantasy Football Challenge. You can join by filling out your name and your email and sending me a message on wakeupcalldt.com. You go to wakeupcalldt.com and go to the fantasy football page, and the instructions are super easy. You go to wakeupcalldt.com, you click on fantasy football, and then it says, if you would like to be in the Central New York League, please fill out your name and your email and send a message. And then you hit send, and then I get it. So many of you have done that. Like I said, we have a few spots I could squeeze somebody in. So make sure you get on it right now and join me in the Wake Up Call Fantasy Football Challenge. We're going to do some NFL here. We're not going to get to everything today, but we're going to get to some. So I'm just going to go through these preseason games and make some notes. Sam Bradford looked okay. 14 of 19, 115 yards. Didn't throw a pick, but didn't throw a touchdown. Landry Jones looked awful. Four interceptions, 12 of 20. We should say he's 16 of 20 because he completed 12 passes to the Pittsburgh Steelers and four passes to the Philadelphia Eagles. So technically, Landry Jones was 16 of 20, but four of them went the wrong way. 111 yards, no touchdowns. It was terrible. Daryl Richardson rushing for Pittsburgh, 1.5 yards a carry. That was gross. Kenyon Barner did well for Philadelphia for the second week in a row in preseason. He got a touchdown, almost 7 yards a carry, six carries for 41 yards. Looked pretty good. Ryan Matthews, 3.6 yards a carry average. Really nothing to write home about. And nothing really to say. Eli Rogers for Pittsburgh caught four of the five passes that came his way. That was all right. Sammy Coates, who I'm hoping, and I'm sure Pittsburgh fans are hoping, does better and makes a name for himself, just, you know, makes something out of this season. You know, he did all right. He caught half the passes that were thrown to him, but he's definitely got to show more than that if you're going to draft him in fantasy football and if, you know, if he's worth it. A.J. McCarron, who I think could start on another team potentially for Cincinnati, went 10 of 15. He had a touchdown, no picks. Matt Stafford, 8 for 11, 113 yards, no picks, no touchdowns. That was pretty good. His backups both threw an interception. That's not good for those of you that have a team quarterback. And Dwayne Washington, which is very ironic and crazy for the Central New York listeners who obviously love and miss Dwayne Pearl Washington. Dwayne Washington, who went to college in Washington, to make it even more ironic, he is a running back that's a rookie for Detroit. He was drafted late in the 2016 draft. He had a touchdown and 22 yards on six carries. Theo Riddick, 7 carries for 17 yards. Really nothing to talk about. Rex Burkhead, who might be one of my favorite names of the preseason, had 4 carries for 42 yards for Cincy for 10.5 yards per carry. Take that, America. And Tyler Boyd, 2 catches for 38 yards and a touchdown. He is the product of Pittsburgh, one of their best wide receivers that they've had in their recent history. And for Cincinnati, he was their top guy in preseason. Could be a huge weapon for the Cincinnati Bengals, who already have weapons. Could open up A.J. Green and help some guys out there, finally. Marvin Jones for Detroit, 4 catches, 65 yards, caught 4 or 5 passes thrown his way. Golden Tate caught 3 of 4 balls thrown his way. Not too shabby. A.J. Green for Cincinnati caught both of the passes that were thrown to him. If you're just listening in, I'm going through preseason week 2 to give you some notes for fantasy football and for your teams on players to watch out for. Brian Hoyer, not a great day for Chicago. He went 4 of 14, and he's not named Jay Cutler, and he threw an interception. That's gross. Jimmy Garoppolo, on the other hand, had another good showing for the Patriots. He'll be the starter going into week 1 with Tom Brady finally out for his 4-game suspension that was over a year in the making. Jimmy Garoppolo went 16 of 21 for 181 yards, a touchdown, and no interceptions. Jeremy Langford came back up, didn't have a great week last week for Chicago. This week he had almost 7 yards a carry, 8 carries for 55 yards, and a touchdown for Chicago. And then LeGarrette Blount had 11 carries for 69 yards, and a touchdown for the New England Patriots, which was nice to see for him, and a positive for LeGarrette Blount, who has obviously found a good home for himself, I would say, in New England. New England receiving, A.J. Derby 6 catches out of 7 targets, 1 touchdown, 71 yards. Second season, he's out of Arkansas. He was drafted in the 6th round by New England, and he looks the part of a Wes Welker. So, could be another guy to look, or a Julian Edelman, somebody to look out for. Martellus Bennett caught both passes thrown his way against his old team, which was Chicago, going over to the New England Patriots. Alshon Jeffrey caught both of the passes thrown his way. B.J. Daniels caught both passes thrown his way, one for a touchdown. B.J. Daniels was a former quarterback at South Florida who was playing wide receiver for the Chicago Bears, who could be a pretty cool weapon for them in the passing game in this season, and Chicago is desperate for offense. So any little bit helps. And I'll do one more game for this week with the time that we have allotted. Atlanta and Cleveland. Matt Sims, that's my dude from the New York Jets. I spent a lot of time with him there in SUNY Cortland, and I got to meet his dad, Phil Sims, who obviously played with the Giants and made a lot of history. Matt Sims went 10 of 13, 1 touchdown, no picks, 136 yards. Kudos to him. There's 3 Matts. It's Matt Cubed on Atlanta. Matt Sims, Matt Schaub, Matt Ryan. So if you start someone in Atlanta named Matt, you're probably correct. In Cleveland, Robert Griffin III had a nut. You know, well, we talked about this before in Friday's show. Threw 2 touchdowns, 6 of 8. So 6 of 8 on the day against Atlanta. And 2 of those 6 passes were touchdowns. 96 yards. He ran for 12 yards a carry, 3 for 36 on the ground. On the other side, Cyrus Gray ran for Atlanta, 18 carries for 76 yards, over 4 yards a carry. And obviously, Cyrus is a name that you know from Texas A&M. So he had a pretty good day on the ground himself. And Isaiah Kroll had 4 yards a carry for Cleveland as an actual running back, 7 carries for 28 yards. Receiving, Terrell Pryor caught a touchdown pass. He also moved like B.J. Daniels from quarterback to wide receiver in the NFL. And Devin Lewis Fuller on the other side for Atlanta, 4 catches off of 4 targets and a touchdown. Rookie out of UCLA, drafted in the 7th round. And Devin Fuller having a good day. Devin Lewis Fuller with a touchdown and catching all 4 passes. Mohamed Sanu, who came over from Cincy, never really fit there. And obviously came out of Rutgers, a Rutgers product from New Jersey. He had 5 targets, caught 3 of those, so he did okay on the day. And Gary Barnage, a big tight end last year that was flying low on the radar that I think is a top 4, top 5 this year, caught both of the targets thrown his way for preseason week 2. So that's what I'll say about preseason. I'll be covering fantasy football in the NFL all the way through. We're going to take a step aside right now to get Jorge Madero on the phone for Covering the Bases of Life, which talks about life. It talks about sports. We're going to talk about living your dreams today, whether you're an athlete or not, and that's coming up in just a minute here on Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora, an exclusive segment covering the bases of life with Jorge Maduro, Miami Hurricanes Baseball Hall of Famer, as well as a former Syracuse Chief that was in the farm system of the New York Yankees. That's coming up next.
The Market Diner prides itself on bringing the local community fresh ingredients that are better than going elsewhere. Open for breakfast, served all day, lunch and dinner with daily specials. The Market Diner is located at the Regional Market on Park Street, right across from Destiny USA. For takeout, call 315-474-5247. The Market Diner. Local. Fresh. Better. Larger Than Life Toys and Comics is a 6,000 square foot haven of comics and collectibles located inside the Great Northern Mall in Clay, New York. They offer new as well as vintage comics, collectibles, video games, and more. Larger Than Life Toys and Comics will also buy from you. So bring in your used or vintage comics and toys today to their store inside the Great Northern Mall in Clay, New York. Call 315-622-1891 to learn more about their trade-in policy, store credit, and even layaway. That's 315-622-1891. And make sure to like their Facebook page, Larger Than Life Comics, for constant updates, store hours, and more.
Carvel DeWitt, it's what happy tastes like. Do you know why? Because we make ice cream. creamy, rich, flavorful ice cream. Not yogurt or ice milk like some of our competitors. Ice cream. Fresh, by hand, daily. For the calorie conscious, we have something new for you. Our new Carbolite. Same great flavor, creaminess, and texture of our regular ice cream with only 35 calories an ounce. So whether you want an ice cream cake, flying saucer, dasher, carvalanche, hard or soft ice cream, we will satisfy your craving with our fresh, handmade regular or new Carbolite ice cream. Carbo DeWitt. It's what happy tastes like.
Clothing that will change with you without you having to change. DreissigLady.com, DreissigLady.com, Lady.com, with the Bamboo Line Relax Fit Clothing, as well as the Athletic Fit Clothing. DreissigLady.com is fit for any woman, any time of the day, anywhere. Whatever you're doing, whatever your day commands of you, command yourself to feel comfortable in Dreissig Lady Apparel. Dreissig Lady.com. For all the women out there, feel good in what you're wearing and don't feel like you have to constantly change throughout the day. Whether you're a stay-at-home mom, a business owner, going for a jog, going for a meeting, or just relaxing at home, DreissigLady.com is the right fit for you. Dreissig Lady.com.
Cam's Pizzeria isn't just a pizza place, it's a piece of home. Whether you're in Baldwinsville, Camillus, Oswego, or on Lemoyne Plaza, Tony Calcibetta finds a way to give you something that you can't find anywhere else. You go out to get something to eat, you're going to get something to eat. You're not in your own home. Well, when you go to Cam's Pizzeria in Baldwinsville, Camillus, Lemoyne Plaza, and Oswego, those locations give you the feeling of just being at home, relaxing, being comfortable. There's nothing like going out and getting good food, and Cam's Pizzeria will give you that. From their traditional slice to pepperoni to my favorite, the cheeseburger pizza, which you have to try, as well as buffalo chicken, chicken bacon ranch, and the other specialties and favorites they have. It's not just about the pizza. It's about the relationships. It's about building a bigger family. And Tony Calcibetta has been all about that since day one, which is why I wanted to work with him, which is why I want to send you there. Because when you sit down in a Cam's Pizzeria, you feel like you're sitting at home. You feel like you can be there with your family, your friends, to study, to have a meeting, or maybe to meet the best person you'll ever find in your life. I know that when I go to Cam's, I truly feel like I'm just walking to another room in my house. I'm just having great pizza in a great atmosphere. A place where I feel comfortable, where I feel appreciated. A place that isn't just a pizza place, but a piece of home. Go to camspizzeria.com right now to get the addresses to the Camillus, Baldwinsville, Lemoyne Plaza, and Oswego locations. Camspizzeria.com. That's C-A-M-S pizzeria.com. Cam's Pizzeria. Truly an experience that you'll always want to come back to.
Welcome back here to Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora on WakeUpCallDT.com, your one-stop sports shop, and MixLR.com/WakeUpCallDT. If you haven't become a member, make sure you do so now. Like Ecto Coors before the break, who asked a question, you can live chat with me during the show, and we welcome those live chat questions and comments as long as you justify your opinion and you're respectful as a person. Then your comments are welcomed and your questions are welcomed as well. So I want to thank Ecto Coors for being a part of the show and for his question that he had about the Olympics as we were discussing it. And we welcome anybody to share their questions and their comments during this segment that we do every Monday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. And that is Covering the Bases of Life with Jorge Maduro, who is a University of Miami Hurricanes Hall of Famer for the sport of baseball, a former Syracuse Chief, and in the Yankees organization in their farm system, and somebody who had his father, Bobby, play the sport of baseball, as well as his children get connected to baseball, connected to sports in general. So a sports family that understands that when you play sports and you're around the world of sports, it's not just about what you do on the field or on the court. It's also what you do off the field, off the court, in the game of life. And that's why we're covering the bases of life with Jorge Maduro once again live here on Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora. Jorge, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm doing great, especially you gave me great news that we've had some good feedback from great friends of ours. So that makes it all worthwhile. This show, again, I thank you for inviting me to be part of the show. and I look forward to great things happening from it.
Absolutely, and you bring up those two friends, and we're going to talk about living your dreams today, but I want to make mention of two gentlemen that got in touch with me this morning in support of our segment covering the basis of life, which is exclusive to Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora, with myself, obviously Dan Tortora, and Jorge Maduro. And I want to make mention of those two gentlemen. First, I want to make mention of Ruben Simpson, who got in touch this morning and reposted or liked that we were doing this segment covering the basis of life. And you obviously, Jorge, have a connection to Ruben Simpson. So share your connection, why he's important, and why his support is important to what we're doing here on Wake Up Call.
You know, Ruben is a great friend. After playing professional baseball, I got into softball, a modality called modified softball. And we were national champions 6 out of 7 years that we played. Ruben was a great part of it. He was instrumental. He was a good second baseman. But more importantly, he was a great teammate, a lot of enthusiasm, and he also has translated that to the business world. He has a cabinet business here in Miami and does a great job.
When you see his support, and obviously, you know, building a bridge from Central New York to Florida is something that I've worked to do, and I thank God has been done successfully since 2009. And here we are in 2016, 7 years later, to build that bridge between Central New York and the state of Florida. You've done it as well, up and down the East Coast. What can you say about somebody like Ruben Simpson and why people that are listening in Central New York can benefit from hearing what you have to say and benefit from people like Ruben Simpson in Central New York?
Well, because the important thing is like baseball, softball, all these games. You know, my father used to say, baseball gets families together, gets communities together, gets countries together. So baseball, whether it's here in New York, anywhere that's played, it's got great stories, got great people, and it's important that we bind together. It doesn't matter where we are, as long as we're trying to develop each community that we live. And baseball is a great instrument to bridge that gap between, you know, cities.
What is it, speaking here on Covering the Basis of Life featuring Jorge Maduro, Jorge, what is it about baseball? Because when we look at sports and we look at how sports can bring people together, what makes baseball special to you that you chose that to be an avenue? I know you're a former baseball player, so obviously it's close to your heart. But what makes baseball such a... What makes baseball the right bridge to bring people together?
Because baseball has, for example, it makes you think quite a bit. Sometimes people don't like baseball because they say slow, but it's really not slow. It's a thinking man's game. In order to succeed, you need to have a strategy. You need to formulate a game plan, and then you can see it in the game. Sometimes maybe we don't do a good job explaining to the fans about the game of baseball, which is one of the things that I hope to do, you know, through you. Educate the people into, again, the techniques, the science behind the game. The other thing that it has is, it gives you, if you go to a baseball game, and I've always thought about a grandfather, a son, and the grandson, all talking, eating peanuts, Cracker Jack, singing, you know, take me out to the ball game. It bridges the family. It brings families together. It's small enough. Football is a great game. Basketball is a great game, except it's a little bit too fast. People cannot talk. You have to be yelling. You have to be screaming. You don't have the emotion. You know, baseball, again, gives you time to basically think, get together, and those are elements. At the same time, it's a tough game. I'm cut. I have stitches in my hand. I have broken finger. I played my whole junior year, you remember, with a broken finger. I got hit with a bat. You know, a guy swinging. I got caught. A guy sliding in home plate. So you have the elements of football, the toughness, you know. So again, it bridges a lot of things. It has science too. That's why the minor leagues, which is sometimes a reason why athletes don't want to get into baseball. It's easier to either football or basketball, you make it or not. In baseball, you have to develop those skills. We talked about it last week. Sometimes what's happening in the big leagues now, players are rushed too fast to the big leagues. So you're seeing too many errors that basically those are the errors, mental errors mostly, that those are the things you learn while you're going in the minor leagues. So that's where, and you know, that's why I call it, you know, America's game.
When you
America's
look,
pastime.
When you look at this being America's pastime, and like you said, living your dreams is something that we were going to discuss today. You know, you got to live a dream and the opportunity to play the sport of baseball. But when you look at the fact of patience that you just brought up, baseball is a patient game. It is a thinking man's game. You're trying to outsmart the pitcher. You're trying to figure them out. You're trying to take your time and pace yourself for the right moment. Well, you hit on something, Jorge, that we live in America today in 2016 where there's a lot of impatience. People want it right now. Everything is at your fingertips. I mean, you can listen to my show six different ways right now. And I go wherever people go. I'm with them constantly. You can get to me on Facebook, YouTube, LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter, my website, my you know, two websites that I have, podcast, Podbean, as well as download the apps. So we live in a world where there's constant information and ways to get something right now. How do you teach living your dream as a patient game? Because I know you got to be patient, and you know you have to be patient, but we live in a world with a society that's not always patient.
Well, that's why we're trying to talk a lot about the spiritual component. And right now, remember, after I played baseball, I spent 40 years from the time I retired in baseball to when I retired from business, which now I'm back, but I spend in healthcare. And one of the biggest problems in healthcare is that stress is conducing or leading to a lot of different sicknesses. Right now, heart problems, cholesterol, all that is as a result of stress. So the spiritual component, that's what we talk about, the spiritual component, which is not really religion. I want to make sure people understand growing spiritually, getting in tune with yourself, getting in tune with your Creator. If you're a Christian, it makes it easier because you got Jesus that you can, you know, follow His teachings. But becoming, you know, in tune with who you are and with nature, it will help us reduce the stress that we have and therefore the sickness that we have, and therefore lower the cost of healthcare, which is right now is taking most of the money from families.
Absolutely. You know, and you look at that spiritual side, and like you said, not religion, just having a relationship with God, having a relationship with something bigger than yourself, and making sure that you let that guide you as opposed to letting materialistic things or money guide you. Let something that created you, that's bigger than you, let God be your guide. And when you look at that in the world we live in today, Jorge, because I talk about it a lot on the show, and I opened the show with this, where I said, you know, I'm not afraid to talk about God. And, you know, this world, there's other people in the media that are throwing you lies, cheating, stealing, saying terrible things, ruining people's lives just for a story. And then people are saying they're offended to hear about God, where I'm offended to hear 99% of the things I hear. God's not one of them. So when we're trying to spread this message of positivity and we're telling the world to slow down, be patient, think about God, believe that there's something bigger in the room than yourself, how do you feel about that message and how it gets through? Do you feel like you've been able to share that message in Central New York and down in Florida in a way where you feel like it's been welcomed, or do you feel like there's still a lot of work to do?
Well, I definitely think there's a lot of work to do because there's huge confusion between spirituality and religion. People confuse those two topics. And basically what we're trying to do, we want to make sure that people do not follow false gods, that people follow, you know, the right God, the right example for us, a Christian, like we've talked about it, is basically following the teachings of Jesus, which is, again, take care of your, be kind, be compassionate, you know, be thoughtful of others, reach out to others. What's wrong with that? look at the tension that we had at the schools. Now, we have the majority of us who do believe in Christ, who do believe in doing good, but then they took God out of the schools. Look what's happening in the schools. You know, I just heard this morning in the news that, you know, it says that there's a lot of threats against schools. The whole thing is like basically scaring everybody here in Miami, you know, with the mosquitoes and the bombs. So everybody is constantly living a stressful life. Everybody's basically listening to negativity instead of listening to something positive. So I guess also I have to put a little bit of a responsibility on us to go out and spread the word and do it kindly. Remember, somebody said one day, I can't remember where, he says, the only Bible that people might read is your life. It's how we conduct our lives at work. We don't have to be talking about God all the time, but maybe people will ask us, you know, why is this guy different? And then you can go ahead and tell them. So we have to be respectful. I feel a lot better now that I'm out of the corporate America. I spent 40 years in corporate America trying to make a difference. And that's where, in Miami, I'm proud to say I was one of the leaders or one of the first person talking about wellness. That was my way to be respectful in the workplace, but be able to talk about physically, mentally, socially, financial, and spiritual value. So that was my way to bringing God to the workplace, by talking about spirituality, but doing it in a way that was respectful to those in the business world. I never shied away from somebody who was telling me that they were offended. Well, I was offended too, if I don't talk about God. So if they have rights, we have rights. And we need to be able to be diplomatic, but stand up for our rights. I think we have let ourselves be taken by a few, you know, the silent majority. It's you know, we're being silent. A priest friend of mine said that the world gets better, not because the works of the evil or the bad people, or the so-called bad people, but the apathy of the good people. We have too many choices here in Miami, in New York, basically in this great country, to do too many things. Voting, we're doing everything for people and trying to find peace instead of maybe slowing down and find the real peace. So for me, it has helped me to slow down to be more peaceful than I've ever been in my life.
And that's obviously... Go ahead, what were you going to say?
I don't know if that makes sense, but that's, you know, that's my witness at least.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think, you know, slowing down is the only way you could find peace. I don't think speeding up finds peace. I don't think rushing finds peace. I don't think quick decisions find peace. I think that because we live in a society that's constantly going, you know, people laugh about China and, you know, that there's people in factories that sleep inside things that look like shell, like drawers or shelves or whatever, that they sleep inside these drawers and then just wake back up, go to work. We're going toward that style. And when you tell someone to just stop and meditate for 5 minutes, I've fallen victim to this myself. I'm like, I don't have 5 minutes to sit down. And you do. You always have 5 minutes to just take a break and think about what you could do to get better. And, you know, that's why this segment, Covering the Bases of Life, is so important to this show and to everybody that's listening, and to everybody that's yet to listen. Jorge, I did want to make another mention about somebody else that had gotten in touch with the show, and that's another friend of yours that got in touch with me this morning and actually wrote me a very nice message, and that's Larry Gowell, who played for the Syracuse Chiefs in 1973 and 74. What can you say about Larry and his importance as we bring it all back to Central New York? You played with the Chiefs. Larry did as well. What can you say about Larry?
Well, not only did I play with Larry in AAA, I played with Larry in Class A. I played with him in the Instructional League. Then we went to AA together, and then we went to AAA together. So again, that's the fun that you miss once you leave the game of baseball. You know, Larry and I spent, 5 seasons, 560 some games together, you know, battling the competition, you know, grooming ourselves. He was a very tough pitcher to catch. He was a sidearmer with a very heavy ball and a sinker ball. So I had great moments catching him, and we formed a great friendship. And it was recently that we hooked up again together, and it happened to be through the insurance business. I was in Syracuse, and again, I'm opening a business in Syracuse Insurance, and there's a third party by the name of Tom Hill, and he's going to be like the manager in the office. And he brought in a friend of his from Maine to basically talk to us. And when he saw my name, he said, geez, I know a guy named Larry Gow, who also did very good at insurance in Maine. And that's how him and I hooked up, and we have been connected. And it's been a lot of fun. Larry has been singing. In fact, he sang the national anthem in the Red Sox game. And I think he has a son, too, who is into baseball. So, again, he's continued the Gow legacy in baseball. He's a super guy.
When you see that, when you see how things come full circle and how small the world really is, I open the show by discussing the fact that I had friends in college. First week that I moved in, I met Brandon, I met John, I met Steve, I met Elisa, and we all got to talk. The next year, I met Mark, John's younger brother. And from that first week of all of us being able to meet with one another at Marywood University, we didn't play a sport, we just went to the same university together. But we all got to be around each other and talk. Actually, John and Mark played baseball, and we got to, you know, spend some time together. And now we're going into 2017, which will be a 10-year anniversary of our friendship, a friendship that's lasted throughout any test of time and anything that's ever happened. So when we speak on Ruben and we speak on Larry for you, Jorge, you know, when we look at covering the bases of life, one of the things to remember about covering the bases is, correct me if I'm wrong, but there's always somebody out there that's telling you whether or not you should steal third. There's always somebody out there that's giving you advice on what you need to do. So are our friends, as we're trying to cover the bases of life and get home, do we not have friends that are out there that are telling us when it's safe to come and when we should stay where we are?
That's right. And I think it's also important to talk about the difference between a friend and an acquaintance. A friend is one who walks in when the rest of the world walks out. You know, those are special people that have been with us on special moments. Acquaintances are those who are with you when you're playing, when they can get autographs, when they can get something from you. You know, and those are guys that sometimes drain athletes. So the important thing is in life to develop friends. And, you know, to develop a friend, you also have to be a friend. So it's a great teaching a tool also to learn to be a friend and to cultivate it. That's why I'm very, very excited about this show, because the way any enterprise, any business, it grows, you know, little by little through word of mouth. So here's a perfect example. One friend told another friend, again, to listen to the show. And again, if we all work together, it's a ripple effect. And who knows, maybe through this show here, we can make a big difference, you know, in the way things are in Miami, Syracuse. And then basically, you mentioned somebody in Pennsylvania, in California. It's, you know, everybody's important, and everybody has a message to spread. So hopefully together we can do it and have a lot of fun, you know, doing it at the same time.
Absolutely. And Jorge, as always, I'm gonna open up to you if you have anything, any other topic that's on your mind this morning. But I think that, you know, this was truly a segment where we covered so much and got to talk about so many different feel-good things in a world that wants to focus on the negative. We focus on the positive here on Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora and here in this segment covering the basis of life. So open floor for you. Is there anything else that you would like to share with my listeners while you're on the air?
No, the only thing I want to make sure is that everybody understands that we all have a dream. We all have a something that we have to do, and it's important that we can help each other develop that dream. You know, fulfill your destination, we have to fulfill, we have the power to do it within ourselves. So sometimes what it takes is reaching out to somebody and say, hey, I need help here. Hey, can you help me here? And that's hopefully what we will do with the show, is help each other, you know, walk through the game of life, win at the game of life. Sports is good, but sports is also, you know, only a few seasons at best. But the game of life goes on. So, and it's important that we find the peace while we're playing the game. I heard a preacher the other day say, you know, eternal life is now. It's not you have to wait until to get the eternal life. Eternal life is now. The moment that we have to seize the moment, we have to live in the moment. Another statistic I've heard in the past few days, it says 60% of the people live in the past. 30% of the people live in the future. So only 10% live in the now. That's why whoever gets up in the morning and goes to work has hardly any competition, because it's not 90% of the people are not doing it. They're thinking what happened or what's going to happen, but they're not seizing the day, seizing the opportunity. So I just want to encourage everybody to find the dream. If you don't have a dream, we can help you, you know, write to Dan, text us, let us know where you need help. We'll be glad to, you know, we're here to do that. So I thank everybody for listening, and you, Dan, for this great show. So count with me to be with you for the rest of the season here.
And I appreciate it very much for everything that you've shared, Jorge, because we share a similar view when it comes to helping out other people and not just thinking about ourselves, and making sure that people know that they're not alone when it gets difficult, because it will get difficult, and then it'll get good, and then it'll get difficult, and then it'll get good, and then it'll get difficult. And weathering that storm is finding out who your acquaintance are, who your friends are, and who has their best, who's looking out for your best interest, who's looking out for theirs, and, you know, who is willing to put a hand out. And like you said, a friend is somebody who walks in when everybody else walks out. And I've had a blow of reality recently with who walked in and who walked out. And I'm thankful for who walked in. And for those that walked out, I'm thankful for what they taught me, because you can learn something from every tough situation. And Jorge, as always, I thank you for sharing with me Monday mornings at 10 a.m. with Covering the Bases of Life. And my listeners will look forward to having you next week.
Thank you, and God bless.
All right, take care. That coming once again from Jorge Maduro, Hall of Famer for Miami Hurricanes baseball, a former Syracuse Chief, and in the Yankees organization while he played in his professional baseball career. I want to thank Jorge Maduro for everything that he's been to this show. And we are going to take a step aside, because we've got to get into all this. I don't want you to miss a minute. There's a ton of information coming up about Syracuse football with Syracuse alum Robert Drummond and myself in our 2016 Syracuse football primer. We're going to go broad scope. Then we're going to predict the Coastal Division, predict the Atlantic Division, best team to worst team for both. And we're going to go position by position, offense, defense, special teams, to tell you who we need you to look out for this year for Syracuse football. So if you're a Syracuse fan, Central New York native, whatever it may be, fan of the Atlantic Coast Conference, fan of football, fan of college football, fan of the NFL, this is a big segment for you, and it's a segment I proudly bring you that happened live at the Orange Crate Express on 309 East Seneca Street in Manlius, New York. I want to thank RC for letting us be there. I want to thank the fans that showed out, and I want to thank you for listening in to what's about to come. This is your Syracuse football primer that we have put together, Rob Drummond and I, to share with you, to get you excited, get you ready, get you prepared, and get you thinking for the upcoming football season.
Here is Stacy Tanner, owner of Ole Ole, talking about the freshest Mexican food you will find.
Every year as a family, we go to Mexico on vacation, and we love the cuisine. We love the freshness of the food. We can promise you freshly made food. Nothing comes in a package here. We got a bag of rice and a bag of beans, and the rest is all fresh vegetables and meats. We really wanted to represent Mexican cuisine and fresh food, where family and our young people or older people can go have a healthy, good meal. Well, we are located in the Matadale Shopping Plaza. My side faces Woody's Jerkwater, so we are literally neighbors, my husband and I. So kind of a side entrance. And that's on Brewerton Road in Mattydale. Our phone number is 455-5653 or 455-5-OLAY.
Serving the Central New York community for over six decades, the Penn and Trophy Center, located on 111 East Willow Street in Syracuse, New York, is your home for custom engraving of plaques, awards, trophies, clocks, watches, as well as personalized gifts, sports awards, and so much more. When it comes to finding the right gift for anyone in your family, on your team, or in your business, the Penn and Trophy Center is the place to go. 111 East Willow Street in Syracuse, New York. Call now to set up an appointment, 315-422-8797. That's 315-422-8797. Or stop in at 111 East Willow Street in Syracuse, New York. And to see more from Penn and Trophy Center, go to pennandtrophy.com. That's pennandtrophy.com.
This is Dr. Tim Whiting of Sterp Chiropractic and Wellness Center. Here at Sterp Chiropractic, we strive to provide our patients with the highest quality of care in a comforting and welcoming atmosphere. We are not simply pain doctors. We spend time looking at the whole body and address each patient's needs and goals. This usually includes chiropractic adjustments, muscle work, and tips on nutrition and supplementation that fits each patient's needs. We want to develop a plan that promotes overall health and wellness and focuses on future injury prevention. Our office is located at 1628 West Genesee Street in Syracuse. Please give us a call at 315-472-7128 with any of your chiropractic or wellness needs.
This is Mike, your trainer at Precy Speed School on 7201 Jones Road in Baldensville, inside CNY Family Sports Center. Call 315-635-5019 now and mention Dan Tortora to get a free evaluation and free first class. That's 315-635-5019.
Here is Tommy from Woody's Jerkwater Pub and Grub.
Woody's is going into its 13th year, and you know, we started out as a what we thought was going to be a neighborhood corner bar, which has turned into, you know, a really good sports bar. We're adding 360-inch TVs. Just really a great place to have a beer and have some food. So that same Irish pub feel where you can go in there and relax and not worry about, you know, what's going on. I take pride in our food. We have burgers, wraps, salads, Cubans. Our wings, obviously, I think are some of the best in the city. We have a great Philly cheesesteak. We have a great Cuban. All my soccer players love the Buffalo Chicken Wraps.
Woody's Jerkwater Pub and Grub is located in the Mattydale Shopping Center off of Brewerton Road in Syracuse, New York.
Welcome here to Orange Crate Express. Here with Rob Drummond, Syracuse alum and NFL alum. Here to give a Syracuse football primer going into the season. For the last couple seasons, Rob and I have been previewing Syracuse football on Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora on WakeUpCallDT.com. And last year we did the home games at Orange Crate Brewing Company downtown on 721 South Krause Ave. And we did the away games to pregame for Syracuse football right here at the Orange Crate Express on 309 East Seneca Street in Manlius, New York. So, Rob, first and foremost, I always ask how you're doing, but we talk all the time. So,
yeah, I'm doing great.
So, to go into this season, obviously, Syracuse has been very tight about what they let out. You know, that's something that happened toward the end of Doug Marone, going into Scott Schaefer, and now with Dino Babers, and it's very quiet how much gets out. Syracuse University is putting out the videos and the interviews, but not a lot that the media gets to see. And if you drive by practice, you can, you know, catch a couple minutes. What do you think about closed practices and not having media there, people there to take pictures and videos and take notes? Because when you had Coach Mack, it was a totally different experience.
I mean, I think that's counterproductive for the simple fact that when I played there, I was under Coach Mack, you know, we had open door policy, whereas as a player, you know, as coach, as a university, everyone was allowed to be able to come in and watch us practice for the simple fact that we were a community team. You know, it wasn't a closed door practice. And back then, we won. Unlike today, they don't win. You know, for the simple fact that if they want fans to be able to come to the game, if they want the community to be able to relate to the players, they've got to open the doors a little more and just stop being so closed-minded and so closed to the simple fact that people want to see what you are. Okay, you have all these closed practices since I've gotten here, you know, since 2003. What are they doing? It's been probably been about 3 or 4 bowl games, you know. So it's to a point now where it's getting frustrating for, I mean, it's getting frustrating for the former players. So I know it must be frustrating for the fans and the community around here. So they better change something up or start. They go 11-0. Hey, great. It was a great meeting. What they tried to do worked out, but they're not going 11-0. They're not going 10-1 or 9-3 for that matter. So they better change things up and do something to get this community involved, because getting 15, 16, 17, 20,000 fans at your football game is not a good thing.
Yeah. When you look at Dino Babers and kind of knowing what you're getting, with Scott Schaefer, you didn't know what kind of head coach he was going to be. Doug Marone, you didn't know what kind of head coach he was going to be. But with Dino Babers, we know his hurry-up style, fast offense, and we know his defense is the Tampa 2. So are you surprised that he's closed practices and kept things very quiet, knowing that we already, and you know, this is a coach who, we know his offense, we know his defense, so there really isn't anything to hide, as opposed to what Schaefer was trying to do?
I mean, I can't really comment on why he's closed practicing or things of that nature, for the simple fact that I don't know Dino Babers. I've never met him. You know what? I understand his offense. I've seen that offense a million times. It's an up-tempo, fast-style offense. You know, we've seen teams run that offense in these games also. So, you know, it's an offense that he ran very, very well at Bowling Green. You know, he's trying to bring it here to Syracuse and win. You know, I mean, Coach Greg Robinson did the same thing. He brought an offense here to Syracuse. He forced it on the players' throats, and look what happened that first year. So it's going to be an interesting year. Not taking anything away from Coach Babers. As I said before, I don't know the coach, you know. And, you know, so I mean, he's implemented his style, you know, in the Syracuse University. I guess we're going to have to just wait and see if it works.
When you look at the hurry-up style offense, Rob, you and I have seen the last few seasons where Syracuse has had numerous different offensive coordinators. They had Nathaniel Hackett, they had George McDonald, they had Tim Lester, and now they have co-offensive coordinators in Sean Lewis and Mike Lynch. To see each of these coordinators run different style offenses, try to implement different things, what can you say to that? I mean, some of these players have been around to have 3 different offensive schemes in, you know, the last 3 or 4 seasons. So when you're in a situation like that, I mean, did you ever experience anything like that where you have 3 different style offenses within 3 or 4 years, and you have to kind of continuously relearn your coaches, relearn the style, relearn the offense again?
You know what, me personally, I've never experienced anything like that. I can only imagine what's going on in the heads of the upperclassmen as they sit there and have to go through offensive coordinator after offensive blocking scheme and offensive, you know, pass protection and offensive running plays and learning different numerology, you know. It's got to be very, very tough on these upperclassmen just to be able to sit here and go through this for third and fourth, you know, for some guys, 5th time, you know, without their say-so in the matter. You know, but there's an old saying in football, you know, and I think it holds true since the day football was invented. You know, defense wins championships. You know, we're so glued in and we're so excited about this new offense, but it doesn't matter if you can't stop anybody. You can go out there and score 1,000 points. If the other team scores 1,001, you're going to lose the game. I want to know more about their defense and, you know, and how they're going to stand up against the defense, because this is the ACC. Everybody's going to score. You know, so unless you tell me about the defense, unless you tell me what you changed on defense to stop the Florida State from scoring points, it really doesn't matter.
When we look at the defense, it's Tampa 2. Obviously, you know, you're someone who played the game for numerous years, for over a decade. You understand defenses. You've been able to pick apart defenses as a running back. What can you say about the Tampa 2? How would you describe it and define it, kind of what its strengths are?
You know what? We better bring Brett, Tim Green, Dwight Freeney, Ted Gregory, and some of the great front four guys that played a position here in Syracuse, the front line, the D-line of Syracuse, because, you know, the Tampa 2 really relies on the front four guys to get pressure, because you're not blitzing. You're basically the safe defense. The safe defense is going to win, because eventually good offenses pick apart safe defense. Those front four guys are going to have to be the blunt of the pressure that gets to the quarterback. And when four guys are rushing 5, it's very, very tough to get to the quarterback. You know, I mean, I'm all for it. I mean, I had it with Buddy Ryan. You know, I had it with my coaches here at Syracuse, Coach Mack. You know, I had it with my coaches in the CFL, where you put pressure on the quarterback to make mistakes. And when you make mistakes, you get turnovers. When you basically get a four-man rush, you don't put pressure on the quarterback. A good quarterback can sit there and pick you apart all day. Someone like a Tom Brady, someone like a Peyton Manning, you know, someone like a Brett Favre or Aaron Rodgers, those quarterbacks thrive off defenses that just rush 4 guys, because it gave them all the time in the world to just sit there, relax, and
a complete pass. When you have a quarterback, when you have an offense relaxed on defense, you know what? It's a long day, you know, for that team, you know. And I hope Coach Babers knows what he's doing. You know what? This isn't Bowling Green anymore. This is Syracuse University football. We have a different mindset. We have a different mentality. We have a different way we approach it. You know, we're not playing in the MAC anymore. You know, this is the ACC. You know, when you have, you know, teams that are competing for the national championship, you know, teams, you're going to go up against the likes of a Clemson, the likes of a Florida State. Teams that are ranked in the top five nationally, you know, for the past 2 or 3 years. You know, so it's going to be very, very interesting to see if the philosophy and defensive style works, because those front four guys better be primed, better be ready to get at it.
And when you look at the San Francisco defense and you look at kind of what it poses, I mean, it is a zone.
Yeah.
So essentially, you know, what you're doing is, and Dino had said something when I was at the ACC kickoff in Charlotte, North Carolina. He said a quote that kind of stuck out to me. He said, the offense that we have is going to be faster than what you know at Syracuse, and our defense is not going to be as aggressive as what you know at Syracuse. So, you hear the offense is going to be faster, people get excited. Then you hear the defense isn't going to be as aggressive as you remember it, and that sounds like a bad thing. So, you know, Schaefer was known for sending guys straight, just sending them, where Dino's going to have guys, you know, be in the zone and kind of wait and anticipate. Is that a dangerous thing to do with Clemson and Florida State and teams like that, not being as aggressive?
You know what? All I know is that Coach Schaefer pressured Florida State and almost making mistakes, and you know, and winning that game. Did it for 2 years. You know, you pressured Clemson and almost making mistakes and almost winning those games. Did it for 2 years. Now to sit back, relax, and watch the players from Florida State or Clemson be able to go out there and have the time to dissect the defense and make plays against it. You could make for a long year. Could make for a great year. You know what? I need to say, but you know what? It's like, so what? The offense is fast. It doesn't matter if you're giving up this many points. If you go down to score points in 5 seconds, and they go down to score points in 8 seconds, ooh, your offense scored the points in 5 seconds. They just got it right back. So it's going to be an interesting philosophy. You know what? Coach Babers has got to go out there and understand his players, understand his philosophy. You know, and at the end of the day, you know, it's a wait to be seen type of offensive style. You know, but I look at it this way. I'm like, this way. This way. No disrespect to Coach Babers. No disrespect to, you know, Coach Schaefer, Coach Marone, any of Coach Robinson, any of those guys that came in since I retired. You know what? I've been here, born and raised in Syracuse. I was here long before those coaches got here. I'll be here long after those coaches are gone. You know, so I'm just waiting to see what that dash in between is, what those coaches do. I always applaud my own New York, because that is my heart and soul. That's my alma mater. That's my university. That's my hometown. But you know what? What you say on the field, what you say in the media, what you say in the press is one thing. What you need to do is get it done on the field.
And when you look at getting it done on the field, I mean, when you have a zone type of defense for Syracuse, here with Rob Drummond, Syracuse alum, myself, Dan Tortora, wake up call, with Dan Tortora, wake up call, DT.com, doing the primer for the Syracuse football season 2016. When you look at this zone defense, do you think it's Dino Babers' way of kind of making up for the lack of speed, because you're going up against Florida State that's going to get the top receivers out of Florida? They're going to get the fastest guys. Clemson's going to get, you know, fast guys as well. And you have Deshaun Watson, you have Artavis Bryant, you know, you have all these people to look out for when you look at Florida State, you look at Clemson, and some of the other teams, you know, across the ACC with the Miamis of the world and whatnot, and Georgia Tech. Do you think it's almost a way of saying, you know, we know we're not as fast, and we know we're not going to be as fast as some of the other teams that we're going to be playing each year, like Florida State, like Clemson, so let's do a zone where we're just having guys look at taking care of areas and focusing in on spots, you know, kind of having that circle around them, so to speak, where they have to take care of, you know, 5 yards this way, 5 yards this way, 5 yards this way, as opposed to having to match up and run with somebody. Do you think that the Tampa 2 zone is a way of Dino saying, this is how we make ourselves look faster?
You know what? I don't know. Maybe he called Bayheim and asked him how his zone works, so they wouldn't have a football zone team and a baseball, basketball zone team.
On the field,
but you know, me personally, the zones, you know, you go throughout the history of football, and you see the teams that play zone. You know, when a team is up by a lot of points late in the game, what do? They run a pre-game defense, which is basically a zone. What does that allow the other team to do? All of a sudden, get back in the game. It gives the other team momentum. You can't put pressure on the quarterback. The quarterback's allowed to sit back there and stay relaxed and complete passes. When a quarterback relaxes, when a running back relaxes, when the offense is relaxed, they can damage you. They can hurt you real bad. And sitting in the Tampa Bay defense is really going to allow teams to just sit there and be relaxed. You know, I don't know what Coach Rivers' philosophy is. As I said before, reiterate again, I don't know him. I mean, I've seen him before. As a player, I've watched his teams on the football field. And you know what? In the ACC, that can be very, very dangerous. You know what? I just look at Coach Shaper and some of the coaches I've played before, you know, I've played against before, and or seen games played before. It's just like, when you attack, you allow teams to make, allow that defense to, allow the offense to make, make mistakes. It's going to be very, very hard for Syracuse to go out there and just sit there and be strong enough on defense to allow teams to not make mistakes and to be able to score on them. You know, that defense is a safe defense. It's a defense that, all right, they're relying out, all right, we'll score points. We don't want you to score points. We don't want you to get a home run hit. You know, that means you're going to score a lot of points yourself on offense and be able to be in the game. So it's going to be interesting. As I said before, you know, this is going to be a season where everyone's going to be cheering. They can possibly go to a bowl game. This is going to be a season where, oh no, here we go again.
When you look at, before we take our first step aside here at Orange Crate Express, 309 East Second Street, Manlius, New York, Rob, you said that in a Tampa 2 defense, in a zone type defense, you're relying heaviest on your defensive line. Well, Syracuse's defensive line has lost a lot over the last couple seasons. Defensive and going in post-spring, starter at defensive end is Kenneth Ruff. Kenneth Ruff came in as a linebacker. He was an early enrollee for January practice in the spring. He's a freshman. So you have a linebacker that's translating to a defensive end. Behind him, Trey Dunkelberger, who last year was a tight end. And then at nose tackle, you have Peyton Samuels, followed by Stephen Clark, who both had experience and did some good things. Defensive tackle, you have Chris Slayton, who has been here and there, but has never been extremely effective, and you haven't seen him as a starter every game. Tyler Cross was a redshirt freshman, and then you have Anthony Jadice, who didn't see any action really last year, and then at the other defensive end position, Jake Pickard, who was redshirted last year, and Hearns Laguerre, was a linebacker last year. So you're looking at inexperience, changed position, didn't play it down in any position last year, and the only two that have real experience, Kane Samuels and Stephen Clark, that have done good things with it, and behind him, Chris Slayton. So the first string and second string of the defensive line for Syracuse is inexperienced freshmen, redshirt freshmen, and players that were in a different position. And you're saying that the defensive line has to be the most effective part, and that looks like the biggest question mark this year.
All right, let me ask you a question. We were sitting here, we were announcing a game, and during that entire game, we sat and said, okay, Syracuse defense can get no pressure on the quarterback. The quarterback's got all day to sit there. What do you think's going to happen eventually?
Well, obviously they're going to beat. I mean, if the defensive line can't get through, then the DBs aren't going to be able to stay with everybody forever. They're going to go over top, throw an in-air touchdown, and it's done.
Correct. If you can't get any pressure on the quarterback, eventually that quarterback's going to find. So all it takes is 1, 2, 3, 4 plays a game, and that's what's going to happen. You need to get pressure on the quarterback to pressure them to make mistakes. Even the greatest quarterbacks in the NFL, even college, they make mistakes when they're pressured. They think it's going to be a blitz, they try and get off the hot range, they try and get the ball off. You sat here and just got a bunch of redshirt freshmen and a bunch of converted linebackers that are playing defensive ends. Yes, it gives you speed, but these guys are inexperienced. These guys are not big. They may be coming fast off the corner, but it doesn't matter if they're rushing four guys because you don't get help in the center or you can help from a guard. You can keep a running back and help you also as a quarterback's going to have all day. It doesn't bode well to run a defensive zone in the entire game. But you know what? Hey, that's why I'm sitting up in the booth announcing the game, and that's why he's down there coaching.
When you look at the fact that freshman McKinley Williams, the third, is at Syracuse now on the defensive line, so you have him. You also have Jaquan Nelson as an option, and you're looking at a few other guys that you have, you know, here and there, if they stay where they're supposed to be at this point. A lot of offensive linemen brought in, not so much defensive linemen. You have Josh Black as well and Kendall Coleman. So you got four guys that are true freshmen, but they've never seen any action in college football, and they're about to go up against the Deshaun Watsons of the world, who, you know, we chose the media in general
and I agreed with the media in general. The votes that we had for the ACC preseason player of the year was Deshaun Watson, hands down. And, you know, could very well be, I'm sure, a Heisman candidate, if not a Heisman finalist. So when you have four freshmen, that's a take away from them because you played as a freshman. But you have four true freshmen, you got a bunch of redshirt freshmen, and you got a bunch of guys that changed positions. This is the defensive line that we're looking at, a defensive line that used to boast of Chandler Jones, used to have Jim Bromley, used to have these guys that are now in the NFL and have been effective, and now we're looking at a defensive line where there is no, even if they haven't been effective, there's no real names that you know. The Michael Robinsons, the Robert Welshes, they're all gone. So what can you say about how it looks this year? I mean, would you anticipate that freshmen are going to have an opportunity? Because me looking at this right now, it still looks wide open outside of Stephen Clark and Keaton Samuels.
In my experience, unless you have a dominant pass rusher, four guys rushing the ball are not going to create any havoc or create any problems for the offensive line to block. Because you have blocking schemes where if a guy's having a good day, say he gets one sack or he's getting a pressure, with four guys rushing, all you have to do now is what's called chip. You know, it's just bring that the offensive lineman is not covered and bringing him out to the guys that's rushing well. So now that guy's doubled. The other guys can maintain the other three inexperienced guys, you know, and block him straight up. It's going to be, and hopefully the zone works for him, but if it doesn't work for him, it's going to be a long year for Syracuse. I mean, I don't think Colgate, the opening game of the season, is going to be a major test for him. But they have Louisville right off the bat, and we're really going to see what Syracuse is made of in that Louisville game. Not to overlook the Colgate game, because that's the first game in hand, and that's one they have to take care of. But you know what? I mean, I hope those guys aren't overlooking Colgate under the Louisville game, because that's going to be their major test.
That coming from Rob Drummond, Syracuse alum, and myself, Dan Tortora, wake up call with Dan Tortora, which is live every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday morning from 9 a.m. to noon Eastern time on wakeupcalldt.com, is now live inside of Orange Crate Express to have our Syracuse football primer to go into the 2016 season. We'll take a step aside here for a few moments, and we'll be back speaking on the Atlantic Division that Syracuse is in and how Rob ranks the teams going into the season. I made my votes of who's going to be number 1 through 7. The rest of the media and its majority agreed with me entirely on what the number 1 team will be all the way to the number 7 team in the Atlantic Division, including where Syracuse fell. I want to see what Rob has coming up next.
The Market Diner prides itself on bringing the local community fresh ingredients that are better than going elsewhere. Open for breakfast, served all day, lunch, and dinner with daily specials. The Market Diner is located at the Regional Market on Park Street, right across from Destiny USA. For takeout, call 315-474-5247. The Market Diner. Local. Fresh. Better.
Back here with Rob Drummond from Orange Crate Express, 309 East Seneca Street in Manlius, New York. Orange Crate Express, our Syracuse football primer, doing our look into the Syracuse 2016 football season. Dino Babers first, and Rob just gave me his Atlantic Division predictions and his Coastal Division predictions. I had already put mine in with the rest of the media at the ACC kickoff in Charlotte, North Carolina on July 21st to 22nd, so mine have remained unchanged, and they will stay the way that they are. But Rob gave his now, so we're going to go to the Coastal Division, and then we'll go to the Atlantic. In the Coastal Division, you chose Virginia Tech to be first, so what I'm going to do is I'll go back and forth between Rob and I. You give your reasoning why you chose a team, and then I'll give mine. So you chose Virginia Tech with Justin Fuente coming from Memphis to Virginia Tech to be the top team in the Coastal Division. Why did you choose Virginia Tech?
Virginia Tech really recruits heavily in the South, and I just went as a coach. Style offense over, you know, it's just, I think he's a new up-and-coming coach, and I think he's going to bring life to Virginia Tech and the ACC. Virginia Tech has always been a tough team. Virginia Tech has always been a scout team, and I think they're prime right now to run away with the Coastal Division.
I chose North Carolina because there's not been a ton of turnover. Yes, their quarterback is going to change with Marquise Williams being gone, but Mitch Trubisky has been waiting. He's been waiting, it's been going through four springs to be ready for this opportunity. So it's not like they're getting somebody who is completely incapable. They're not starting a true freshman. And they got a lot of talent that's coming back at wide receiver and return. They have Elijah Hood as the running back. They have Ryan Switzer that's going to be there as a kick returner and a wide receiver. and they have a strong defense, and they came pretty close last year, so that's why I chose North Carolina to finish first in the Coastal Division for 2016 in football. Number two, you had Miami, and number two, I had Miami, so I'll go to you first, Rob, and we agreed on this one. Why don't you pick Miami?
You know what? I just remember the University of Miami from the 1980s, and that surge of talented NFL football players they had there, and the former players now are starting to get involved with the University of Miami, the Miami program. You just hear the chatter. It's not just on the East Coast, it's on the West Coast. It's about time for Miami to return to dominance, because you remember the Michael Irvins, the Jerome Browns, the Ray Lewis, the guys came out of Miami, that history, that tradition. And it's time for Miami now to get back to once dominance that they had. I'm hoping Syracuse can get to their dominance, but a little bit of Miami is just the athletes that they're going to be able to get. It bodes well for them. Like going forward in the Coastal Division.
I picked Miami to be number two in the Coastal Division as well, with Mark Richt. He's inheriting a strong quarterback at Brad Kaya. And Brad Kaya was asked to play very early in his career, and he's answered in a very positive way. I think it's a guy that's going to translate to the NFL. So I like that. I like the fact that Miami, at their running back position, is going to have a lot of different weapons to work with, different things that they can do. And defensively, this is a team. I think Miami's kind of finding their way back. Rob, you talked about Miami being the team like they used to be in the old Big East.
Yeah.
And wanting Syracuse to be back there. Well, Miami has started to turn this corner, and they started to win some games, and been relatively, I want to say, under the radar, that they're a team that can win six games, or win seven games, and people still don't think about them as much. I think Miami is prime this year to look like a team in the old Big East and shock some people and push some people. And I think Mark Richt is going to bring a lot of good recruiting back there with his return to Miami. So I think it'll be good, and that's why I agree with you on number two. Number three, you chose North Carolina, which is my number one, and I chose Georgia Tech. So I'll start with why you put North Carolina at three and not one.
For the same reason you basically said, there's not much trouble with North Carolina, The senior quarterback, strong quarterback coming in the U.S. It's a simple fact that Carolina's always a strong team, always a middle of the pack to upper pack team in the ACC. And that's not going to change. So that's the reason I put Carolina in that spot.
I put Georgia Tech in the third spot because Georgia Tech had a very uncharacteristic season last year. Their quarterback just wasn't. This is the thing, they had so many injuries at running back, and they run that triple option.
Yes.
They give you that speed, and it's funny because a couple seasons ago, Syracuse played Georgia Tech, and when Syracuse played Georgia Tech, they were coming into the game averaging like 260, 270 rushing yards a game. And finally, a team kind of figured them out and pushed them down. Well, Georgia Tech was probably the best team to run against Syracuse that season, because Syracuse played Georgia Tech on the road. So when you look at Paul Johnson, you look at what he's been able to do at Georgia Tech, I don't believe that they're going to have a bad season followed by a bad season. I don't see that happening for them. They got a quarterback that has obviously had experience. He has ability to move the ball up and down the field, and now he's going to have more help. There's experience, because this is what it does for you when you don't have a lot of help. Those guys that you have to play that you didn't want to play, and not that you didn't want to play, but the guys you wanted to have some time to rest or redshirt, they have experience now. So you come into this season with an experience behind experience behind experience, and this triple option has, eight or nine guys that are going to be in the mix here, and four or five of them that are capable of out there doing they need to do. So I think Georgia Tech is going to be back looking dangerous again. I think they're going to be exciting again on offense. And they're one of those offenses that are going to score 42, 45 points, 35 points. So their defense might not be phenomenal, but their offense is always going to push you in some of these games. So I look out for them in some big games this season. Fourth in the Coastal Division, you predicted Duke. I predicted Virginia Tech. So we're pretty close on this one. Why did you choose Duke to be number four?
You're smart. Nah. You can look at a lot of teams. You can look at the history of the teams. You can look at that can be a precursor as a the talent on that team. 2 years ago, Duke won the Coastal Division. So you can look at Duke and you're like, you know, they still have that talent. They still have that talent and they have depth. So they're an upper class laden team. You know, I just think Duke is in the middle of the road. They can even push to be in that second round, the second. I don't think the first spot, the deputy side of the third or second spot. You know, I just like Duke. I like the coach. You know, I just like the attitude of the team and how they approach football games. You know, that's the one thing I look for teams. I look at character of teams. You know, and I know we'll get to it a later date, but you know, or a later time. But you look at the character of Florida State, you're like yikes. Because at some point that season, one of those players probably will do something to cost that team in some games to push them down. Whereas you won't get there from a Duke-like team, you know. And that's another reason I have Duke in the fourth spot.
So you have Duke number four, and I have Virginia Tech in that position. And I have Virginia Tech there because, I mean, this could flip-flop either way. But Virginia Tech, Justin Fuente, I got to interview him for the last few seasons that he's been with Memphis because I cover the American Athletic Conference with the ACC. And covering Justin Fuente, this is a guy who's coming into a talented situation. And I actually believe that I might be incorrect in how I did this. I think I hit Duke next and then Virginia Tech. So I think that my memory is failing me. So let me speak on Duke because I believe I agreed with you on this one. And the media had it flipped as a whole. But I'll get to Virginia Tech as number five in a minute. But I chose Duke as well here because of David Cutcliffe. I chose him because he's a strong coach. He knows how to make guys look good. He knows how to make anybody be an effective quarterback. And obviously this is a guy who was training the Mannings, Eli Manning, Peyton Manning over the years. David Cutcliffe, just a very strong-minded, strong-willed, good coach. A coach that's, you know, what you see is what you get. So really nice guy, really down to earth, super humble, and somebody who is very, very good at his job and what he does. So, you know, I do believe that there's talent there, and I'd like to see what that talent can do. And I'm excited about, you know, what we're going to see moving forward with some of these guys that are finally getting some opportunities and moving this team forward. And I think that Duke is going to be dangerous on special teams. I think they're going to be dangerous in their secondary. These are two areas where you're typically expecting them to be. And, you know, I think that their quarterback situation, as long as health stays there, that this is going to be another thing that's going to be good for them. And they put some products in the NFL with Thad Lewis recently and, you know, some other guys. So, you know, I think that this will be a good season for Duke. I don't think it'll be a great season, but I think it's going to be another bowl season. Number five, you had Virginia. I had Virginia Tech. So why did you choose one of the teams from Virginia? What made you choose the Cavaliers?
You know, a lot of times I look at teams, and as I said before, the four teams that starts the season, I always look at character. You can look up and down their roster, but you know what? At some point in time, you know, you're asking your team, you say to yourself, you know what? That team could be, you're competing for a national championship, and all of a sudden, star quarterback does something dumb, a star running back does something dumb, a star player in the team does something dumb. Something dumb. And as some of them been around football a lot of times, that takes away the morale of the team. You look at someone like when Manziel went off through trials and tribulations, Cam Newton went off through trials and tribulations, James Winston went through all the trials and tribulations. You know what? Yes, those teams ended up winning the national championship, but you know what? That was because of the athletes that were surrounded around them. They had other top tier athletes that surrounded around them. So for me, I look at Virginia and I'm saying, here's a team, you know, that's a middle of the pack. Got us to a junior senior last year. Here's a team I think, again, a senior-laden team, a team that has a lot of speed, and a very, very aggressive, you know, fast defense, you know. So I think, me personally, you can win a lot of games enough on defense to put yourself in a position to be in football games. I think Virginia has the talent on defense.
You know, Virginia has Bronco Mendenhall as their head coach now, and Bronco coming from BYU, and somebody that he hired, and I'm very happy that he hired, is Ruffin McNeil, who's a former head coach of East Carolina, one of the greatest motivators, a phenomenal person, and on a very short list of people that I would sit with at any given time to be able to spend some time with. So definitely worth it. So on my side, I chose Virginia Tech. I chose the other team in the state of Virginia, and I chose Virginia Tech because, I mean, I know you have Virginia Tech number one. I chose Virginia Tech number five here because they have a strong coach in Justin Fuente coming from Memphis. Like I said, I covered him for the past few seasons at Memphis. He was arguably the hottest coach out there when schools were looking to replace a vacancy and, you know, fill a vacancy. And when I look at somebody like Justin Fuente, I think that he walks into a situation where he has a quarterback, he has some strength, he has some ability there, but I think that this team is going to need to take some time. He took Memphis, and he turned Memphis around very quickly, so that's why I have Virginia Tech being fifth, because I don't think they'll be the worst team in the division, but, and I do think that he may steal some games, a game against Miami or something like that, but the way I look at it right now is Virginia Tech can be good with Justin Fuente. Anybody's going to be good with Justin Fuente. Justin Fuente, if he came to Syracuse, you know, and we're having a conversation about a guy who can turn a program around in a couple years. So, he can. So, you know, not that Dino won't be able to. I'm just saying Justin Fuente, Matt Rhule, Tom Herman, they were on a short list for me in the best coaches around the country. But I think Virginia Tech will do some good things. I don't think they'll be great. Just say watch out for them in the sophomore year with Justin Fuente. Number six in the Coastal Division, you predicted Georgia Tech, and I predicted Pittsburgh. This is exactly what the media did. The media said Georgia Tech would be six, and I said Pitt would be six. So you have Pitt in a different place. The media overall put Pitt third. I put them six. I'll get to mine in a second. Georgia Tech being number six, why did you choose them to fall there?
Georgia Tech runs that no style, that flex bone offense. You know what? You need a dominant quarterback to really make that flex bone offense work. Yes, it's a ground eating up game, but I just think the defense is this era are getting a lot bigger, a lot stronger, a lot faster. You're not just going to be able to pound the ball down their throat anymore. You're going to have to put the ball in the air to win games.
Yeah.
I just don't think Georgia Tech has been able to be able to put the ball in the air.
So you're not trusting Justin Thomas?
Justin Thomas. Not anybody. You know, it's just like they had up and down year last year, you know, but I just don't think they have enough. You know, with defense, as I said, a lot of teams now are taking guys that can play strong safety or move them to linebacker. Guys that can play linebacker a little bit bigger and move them to defensive end. You know, have more speed in the field. When you have more speed, you can negate a big ground game. Georgia Tech is known for the ground game. I just think that gets negated.
So that's Rob's side of it. My side, Pittsburgh, this is going to be the second season for Pat Narduzzi at Pittsburgh. And Pat Narduzzi, you know, he's had some talent. He's had some good things happen. Nathan Peterman is going to be back as their quarterback. He was somebody that took over last year, and he's going to be the guy now. But then there's Tyler Boyd. Tyler Boyd was one of the best receivers in the country, and one of the most, against Syracuse, he didn't do that well, which, you know, that's props to Syracuse defense, but Tyler Boyd is a huge loss in this offense, and I think that affects you. James Conner, though, fighting cancer, beating cancer, getting back on the field is an amazing story, whether they win a game or not, how many games they win. But I just think that Pittsburgh's going to struggle because North Carolina, Miami, Georgia Tech, Duke, Virginia Tech, just more talent, and I think that, you know, Pitt, like Syracuse, is fighting to get out of the dungeon now that they're in the ACC. That's why I put them there for our seventh pick of the Coastal Division in our predictions. I talked about Pitt being in the basement, struggling to get out at six. You got them at seven, so it looks like we're on the same wavelength with that.
I just think, but as you said, bro, losing Tyler Boyd, man, it's something that happened. You know, not only you lose your top receiver, but you lose your top return guy, your return specialist also. You know, so it's just a simple fact that they're young, you know, they have cover, the cupboard half that they have full. You know, I just think Narduzzi, as you said, in the second year, he's got his hands full, he's got a lot to work with, he's got, you know, and it's coming at him real fast, and I just don't think they're going to be able to turn around this year.
I look to Virginia here, and as much as I like, you know, what I think Brockwell Mendenhall can do, it was sad because Mike London and I had a good relationship, and a good relationship with all the guys, you know, and there's a bunch of guys that got fired or left, whatnot. You know, and Mike London, I feel bad for him because I feel like he was, you know, good at heart and his intentions were good. He's with Maryland now, and he will be there, you know, coach as an assistant coach for the team, and I hope the best for Mike London, and I appreciate his support on my side. I chose Virginia here because between Virginia Tech and Virginia, I said, okay, they both have new coaches. Which one of them is going to make it out of the state of Virginia in a place of relative positivity? And I chose Justin Fuente's Virginia Tech over Virginia and Bronco Mendenhall Hall for this year because I think Virginia's a bigger project. I think it's a bigger thing to have to turn around. I think it's going to take more time than Virginia Tech. So that's why I made this choice, is that Virginia Tech and Virginia are going to be some jobs to work on. But the Virginia job, it's kind of like if you had to repaint a house. And Virginia Tech is a one-story ranch, and Virginia is a three-story house. You know, there's a lot more paint job that has to be done. It's going to take some more time. So I think Bronco Mendenhall, he's going to paint it nice. And he's going to paint that house a beautiful orange, but it's going to take a little bit more time to get that house painted than Virginia Tech. So those are our predictions for the Coastal Division. Rob and I will take a step aside here. We wake up call with Dan Tortora live on location at Orange Trade Express in 309 East Seneca Street, Manlius, New York. Happy to be here with RC for letting us be here and be a part of this. Kevin at the bar today, show him some love. Make sure you tip the man well for the work that he does. We'll take a step aside here. Syracuse Orange alum Rob Drummond, myself, Dan Tortora. When we come back, we'll be discussing the Atlantic Division and how Rob and I are the same-ish in the Atlantic Division.
This is Mike, your trainer at Parisi Speed School on 7201 Jones Road in Baldwinsville, inside CNY Family Sports Center. Kids' classes run in the afternoon and evening weekly. Call 315-635-5019 to sign up. That's 315-635-5019.
This is Dr. Tim Whiting of Sterp Chiropractic and Wellness Center. Here at Sterp Chiropractic, we strive to provide our patients with the highest quality of care in a comforting and welcoming atmosphere. We are not simply pain doctors. We spend time looking at the whole body and address each patient's needs and goals. This usually includes chiropractic adjustments, muscle work, and tips on nutrition and supplementation that fits each patient's needs. We want to develop a plan that promotes overall health and wellness and focuses on future injury prevention. Our office is located at 1628 West Genesee Street in Syracuse. Please give us a call at 315-472-7128 with any of your chiropractic or wellness needs.
Back here on Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora, live on location at Orange Crate Express, 309 East Seneca Street in Manlius, New York. Here with Syracuse alum Rob Drummond, myself, Dan Tortora. Check out this show and all the shows on wakeupcalldt.com. Shows are live every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on wakeupcalldt.com from 9 a.m. to noon Eastern Time. And you can also go to the live feed, mixlr.com/wakeupcalldt. Wakeupcalldt.com is the place to go to listen, watch, and read my coverage of Syracuse, the ACC, the American Athletic, the Olympics, the NBA, the NFL, the Jacksonville Jaguars, flag football, fantasy football, and so much more, including Rob with Raps. So make sure you check us out on wakeupcalldt.com, available anywhere you go, anywhere the internet will take you, which makes it very easy to connect with the show, like this one. So the Atlantic Division, you always have a smile on your face when I'm doing that.
Happy to be alive.
So the Atlantic Division, Rob and I have done our predictions for the Coastal, and now we're doing our predictions for the Atlantic Division, and I think one of us would have the right to smack the other one upside the head if number one and two were any different than what they are. So number one, Rob, who do you have?
Clemson, right? It goes without saying, you know, and for one person only, you know, Deshaun Watson, you know, he could end up winning a Heisman this year, you know. If it's not for McCaffrey for Stanford or Fournette for LSU or Cook from Florida State, you know, Deshaun Watson going to win the Heisman, you know. And he's just electric. He just makes that team go. They're a senior-laden team. They have all the talent. So many returning seniors. You know, it's just Clemson ended up being will be accepting a few outside shots. Number one team all year long.
Yeah.
You know, so it'll be interesting to watch them play this year.
I'm gonna make a very cheesy comment because you said something. Watson is gonna be electrifying.
Yes.
I chose the Clemson Tigers to be number one as well because I watch football and pay attention to it. So, you know, Clemson, Deshaun Watson, their running back Wayne Gallman, their wide receivers Artavis Bryant, and, you know, they have a slew of wide receivers. They're going to be able to do some great things out there. Their defense, the backup to the backup in places like Clemson, Florida State could be a starter at Syracuse, you know. So when you look at what this team is capable of, you talk about what did Clemson lose with, you know, not having guys like Shaq Lawson on the defense. And I talk about what they have and what their abilities are as a whole. So I like Deshaun Watson. I like Wayne Gallman. I think without Delvin Cook in the ACC, you would say Wayne Gallman's arguably the best running back in the ACC out of 14 teams. So Clemson was an easy pick for me. Deshaun Watson is my Heisman candidate and Heisman hopeful at this point. And staying healthy and playing 12 games and plus, you know, a potential few more after that, I think we're going to see Deshaun Watson take that thing home and be the Heisman Trophy winner, as he should be. And, you know, obviously he'll be heading to the NFL and making a team very proud after they take him second in the Atlantic. You predicted Florida State. I predicted Florida State. So typically this is what it is. It's either Florida State Clemson or Clemson Florida State. But Clemson's causing more of a separation, I think, in the last 2 years to be number one outright. And hence we both chose Clemson 1, Florida State 2, without one of us going the other way. So why did you choose Florida State?
I think the only difference between Florida State being 2 instead of 1 to me is Deshaun Watson. You know, for the simple fact that I think Delvin Cook is the most electrifying, or one of the most electrifying running backs in the country. You know, next to McCaffrey from Stanford. Yeah. You know, now you put Deshaun Watson on Florida State, and Florida State would be my number one team. But he's not on Florida State. Yeah. You know, so I mean, right now those teams.
Jimbo Fisher would love to take him.
Yes, he would love to take him. You know, but you know, from the simple fact that they're in a position where either one of these two teams could be the number one team. You know, but right now, Deshaun Watson, just, I think, gets Clemson to the edge. But Florida State not too far behind.
I picked Florida State to be number two because, you know, like Rob said, you don't have Deshaun Watson. Wayne Gallman and Delvin Cook, I mean, you can choose one or the other. They're both going to be strong. They're both going to be good. Wayne Gallman, I mean, you got to think about Clemson was as good as they were last year without a dominant number one running back. I mean, they were looking at two or three different guys. And Wayne Gallman comes into the season as the starter, as the man to look at. They're going to use some other people, you know, everybody does. But I look at Florida State, and, you know, they, like you said, they don't have Deshaun Watson, but they have Delvin Cook. And they have Jacquez Patrick, who came out of Timber Creek in Orlando, was the number one running back to come out a couple years ago, as this is his sophomore season. And as people know, when Syracuse played Florida State, Delvin Cook was injured, and then Jacquez Patrick decided to play insane, which I completely expected from him because of the player that he is. And like I said, Florida State and Clemson, your third or fourth best player is going to be a starter on most other teams around the country. So Florida State, to me, is in second place. I think that, you know, the Clemson-Florida State game is one of the best rivalries, one of the best games in the country every year. And I think, arguably, that you can look at these two teams and look at teams in the SEC, and I would say that this might even be more fun of a game to watch. So, you know, Florida State, top to bottom, and they have talent all over the field. They're going to do some great things. They have Jesus Wilson at wide receiver that's going to make some splashes. And like I said, they have Delvin Cook in their quarterback situation. They got four guys vying for the job in the fall, and it's going to be exciting to see how that all shakes out. But Florida State, to me, is not going to be as good as Clemson, but they will be better than most. So that put them at number two. Number three, Rob, you had Louisville, and I had Louisville. So Rob and I are of like brain in this moment. Why'd you choose Louisville, Bobby Petrino's team?
Bobby Petrino is one heck of a coach. The simple fact that he understands how to get the... He's a lot like Coach Mack. He understands how to get the best out of his players, you know, year in and year out. Louisville, you know, whether it be basketball, whether it be football, you know, their coaching staff, their organization, you know, they're... And I'm looking at this, not just the current team, you know, but just the history. You know, when a coach understands how to get the best talent out of his players, you know, that's a very, very good coach.
Yeah.
You know, and he just has a knack for doing that. And that's Louisville, I think, is in the second tier. Florida State and Clemson are in that first tier. I have a feeling that Louisville is that second tier. And with Syracuse, you know, having them as the second game of the year, I mean, they're going to prove a lot to themselves. You know, if not to the nation, you know, that second game of the season, not to get ahead of myself in Syracuse.
Right. And I think the thing with Louisville, I mean, you saw it last year, you know, Syracuse had started out and people had some high hopes, and then there were some issues, and there were some close games and things didn't work out, and you lose to LSU, but you have a fifth-string quarterback that, you know, you didn't expect to do anything, and, you know, a fifth-string quarterback is Zach Mahoney, and the team only loses by I think 10 points. And then you have, you know, other games that came along where Syracuse played Clemson close for a time. And so, I mean, you look at those opportunities, you look at those places, and, you know, obviously when you're in at those moments, you have to give a lot of respect for Syracuse. But then you have Louisville, who sees Syracuse toward the end of the season, and when they get an opportunity to take a shot at Syracuse, where you're like, Syracuse last-ditch effort on the road in Louisville, in Kentucky, trying to win a game, and Louisville just embarrassed them, and, you know, in the fourth quarter, you know, didn't really even have to play their starters. So you look at a team like that, Bobby Petrino comes back, the team has talent, the team is doing good things, they're getting better, and now they come into this season where I think they're undoubtedly the third-best team in the Atlantic Division of the ACC, and I'm excited about what they're going to be able to do offensively, defensively, and on special teams. I think Louisville is a threat. I think that if Louisville had stayed in the American Athletic Conference, they can be the number one team or the number two team.
They would have dominated.
But with them right now, you know, I think that, you know, they're the third-best team. They're going to go to a bowl game, and again, the third-best team that could be a 9-win team in Louisville. So, you know, kudos to Bobby Petrino in his second time around with Louisville. And, you know, Lamar Jackson is one heck of a quarterback. Very, very dangerous. And if it wasn't for the Deshaun Watsons of the world, he would be getting a lot more representation. But I think, you know, when Deshaun obviously moves along, it'll open up the door for a guy like Lamar, and Lamar will definitely get credit where credit is due. But like you said, there's a first tier and there's a second tier, and I think Louisville, with a good season this year, solidifies themselves that if you're going to go 1-2 and draw a line, that line right outside of 2 is number 3, and that name that's written on that line is Louisville.
I agree.
Look at number 4 that we chose. You chose NC State, and I chose Boston College. So not too far off of each other where I put NC State. But I'll start with you, NC State, Dave Doran. He's had a few seasons there. What makes you pick NC State?
Again, you know, the quarterback leadership is if we look up and down the top 20 teams across the entire country, you look at the quarterback situation. Outside of, you know, just pure raw talent, you know, you get from some of these SEC teams, a few Pac-10 teams, you know, a couple ACC teams, you know, it's a senior, a junior, like, leadership at quarterback that a lot of teams be able to go out there and win. I just feel NC State, you know, the leadership of quarterback and Doran, you know, from what he did last year, you know, they're just able to put themselves in position to win games. As a coach, you always say to yourself, you know, just as a coach, don't allow yourself to lose the game. You know, let the players win the game. And I think, I mean, he does a great job of doing that. Whereas, you know, Coach Schaefer, not so much to his chagrin last year, he put himself in a situation where, as a coach, he lost the game for some of those players, you know. And that's what I think eventually led to his demise. Whereas if he had made different decisions, you know, they possibly could have won that game. And, you know, even the higher-ups would have seen it as a situation of him not losing the game for him. But as a coach, you can't put yourself in a situation of losing games. And I think Louisville's going to be in a great position to be in that middle-tier team. Louisville's probably that third or fourth tier going right now. You get the top tier.
You're about NC State?
NC State, sorry about that.
Okay. So NC State, you know, it was hard for me on who I was going to put at number 4, but because I respect Dave Doran, and Dave Doran taking over and Scott Schaefer taking over, you know, a few years back, I said, give these guys time. You know, Dave Clausen, too, at Wake Forest, just give them time. Well, NC State believes in Dave Doran and gave him time. And Syracuse didn't give Schaefer a whole lot of time to turn this thing around. And the thing that people need to understand is that on the recruiting trail is where it's most important, because the recruits are going to either change the program for the better or change it for the worse. So I can honestly say about Scott Schaefer on the recruiting trail, his coaches and he himself were starting to get those players, those big-name players, get people to flip, get people to say no to Michigan, no to Wisconsin, no to staying in the state of Florida. And, you know, I give him a lot of credit for that, and I think that recruiting-wise, Schaefer was doing amazing, amazing things that Dino Babers is going to be able to capitalize off of. For NC State, you know, Dave Doran got to stick with the guys that he recruited. One of the guys that I love, though, is Matt Days. Matt Days is his running back. Matt Days was on pace to be the all-time leading rusher in NC State history before getting injured last year, and he has an opportunity to be out there this year. He's healthy. He's back at it. I can't wait to see him out there. This guy is one. I mean, this is a veteran back. This is a guy that, you know, he gives you some of that power. is going to be exciting. I think you like watching him, Rob. And, you know, Jacoby Brissett is not there as your quarterback anymore. He was chosen by the New England Patriots, and the New England Patriots have Jimmy Garoppolo, and they have Jacoby Brissett. I think Jacoby's obviously going to get some time in the preseason. He'll get some time in the regular season while Tom Brady's out for the first four games. So, you know, I think Jacoby was highly underrated and underappreciated, but not by Dave Doran. And so that's going to be something to make up for. That's why I didn't have NC State fourth. I had Boston College fourth, because the only team that endured worse injuries than Syracuse or along the same line was Boston College, losing players up and down their offensive line, losing Tyler Rouse. I mean, they lost so many players on this team. They lost their quarterbacks. They had John Fadul playing quarterback. They had freshmen playing, you know, out there doing their thing. They have guys that had no experience out there. You know, Darius Wade, who I think is going to be a very, very good quarterback in college football, he had to go out there because there were just a lot of injuries. So Boston College now, I mean, they had the number one defense in the country, Rob. Number one defense in the country. They were holding teams like Florida State to 14 points toward the end of the game. You're going to, you know, 7-3 games. They, number one defense in the country, but they could not score the ball. And now they have four guys at quarterback and a couple guys with experience. They have one guy, Jeff Smith, that's moving out of quarterback and going over to wide receiver. You got Tyler Rouse coming back, and you got other guys that are capable. And you have defense with the middle linebacker. You have Matt Milano is going to be at the linebacker position. And he's going to be a huge part of the veteran piece to that defense to keep things going and moving in the right direction. And God bless you. So because they have leadership and because they have guys that got experience like Georgia Tech, due to injury, some of these young guys got some experience, it's going to help them out in the long run. Boston College is not going to be in the same position they were in last year, because if there is a lot of injuries, those guys that had to play last year would be able to step up. So I think, you know, Steve Adazio is a heck of a motivator, a heck of a coach, and he's got an assistant coach. They used to be the other way around. He used to be head coach, assistant, and the irony of the world and how the sports world flips, head coach Steve Adazio, former Syracuse assistant, former head coach of Syracuse, Paul Pasqualoni, now Steve Adazio's assistant. So the mentor becomes the student to the teacher now, so to speak, and I'm really happy for Paul Pasqualoni being at BC. So, you know, Paul's done great as a head coach. He's done well in the NFL as an assistant, and I'm excited to see what he can do at Boston College. I just think that having an injury-laden season taught the backups a lot, and now they're going to be back, and they're going to be pushing, and they're going to be a really, really hard team to face. The number one defense in the country just needed their offense to score 14 points. 14 points at times. And I don't think they're going to struggle for 2 to 3 touchdowns a game or 2 touchdowns in the field goal this year like they did last year, which had me put them at 4th. 5th, you had Syracuse, and I had NC State. I gave my reasonings for NC State, but my Syracuse is not up yet. Why did you choose Syracuse at number 5?
I just think Syracuse, you know, I don't know if that's a hard pick, but it's a pick that where, I mean, I looked at my instinct, and I looked at the knowledge I had of the game, where I think Eric Dungy will be a quarterback who's a year mature, whereas I think he came in last year with all the talent in the world, but he didn't understand how to play the quarterback position. You know, I think, you know, Brisley's team, you know, and you know, we'll be able to stress defenses more now. Again, you know, him and Ishmael, with Ishmael on the other side, you know, they have a chance now to really get themselves open, you know, to get a lot better. I can just see Syracuse being in the middle of the road, which has really been the middle of the road, you know, for the past several years. But it's going to take something for them to get over that hump, you know, in order to beat the teams like a Clemson, you know, teams like a, you know, like a Florida State, you know. So they're at that point right now. It's make or break. They need to go out there in a new system, the fourth one in as many years, you know, new schemes on difference, new play calling, new coaches. They have to relearn everything, but it's time for these seniors. It's time for these guys that have been through so many trials and tribulations, just things that they needed to understand and get used to. You know what? These last 4 or 5 years for some of these guys have taught them a lot about life, a lot of changes, but you have to adapt, you have to learn. But I just see Syracuse in that middle of the road pack right now.
You have Syracuse at number 5. I have NC State at number 5, and I put NC State there because, you know, these are two teams that were trying to build something special. But Dave Doran has had more time. He's had more time with his team than Dino Babers has had, and that made me put NC State there. I gave my other reasonings for NC State and why they're good. But NC State, to me, behind Clemson, Florida State, Louisville, and Boston College. I give Boston College a little bit more respect and credit for what they were trying to do. And I think that if you're a D1 school and you're recruiting, and they're recruiting out of Central New York still very well, and Noah Jordan Williams from CBA is verbally committed there for 2017, a wide receiver. And he told me his recruitment is done. He will be going to Boston College. So it's another win, just like Tyler Rouse was, for Boston College. And another win for Steve Adazio to enjoy on his team at Boston College. So NC State, for me, behind Boston College. I think, you know, this could flip-flop either way because I respect Dave Doran, but I couldn't put Syracuse there. At number six, you put Boston College, Rob, with Steve Adazio, and I put Syracuse to finish number six out of seven in the Atlantic. So, why Boston College?
For the same reason you say, Adazio had the number one defense in the country last year, and that was interesting and fun to watch. You know, I watched that Florida State game last year, but they could have scored any points against Florida State. They would have won that game. You know, they played unbelievable on defense. You know, it was an amazing game to watch. You know, so, but I think the injury bug won't hit them again this year like it did last year. You know, I think eight starters returning on defense, seven or eight starters returning on defense. I mean, I think they have a chance to be able to go out there and do the same thing, to put themselves in a position to win games. You know, but I just don't think they have the moxie to be able to get over that hump of Syracuse, or I think Syracuse has more, or Florida State, or Clemson, you know, just to put them in that top tier team. I just think they're middle of the road also. Them and Syracuse can flip. I mean, they're another one of those teams that's in the middle of the road type right now. I like Coach Adazio. As you said before, there are a lot of players on the team who are hardworking players. You know, Tyler Rouse, running back out of Baldwinsville, there. You know, Noah Jordan Williams, who actually coached against in Pop Warner football. So I'll tell you how old I'm getting. You know, so it's always interesting. It's always fun to see how Coach Adazio coached recruits essentially already very well. And good for him. I wish we learned how to do it. You know, but I just keep serious with it. That may be my hometown bias.
And it's kind of funny, too, because you're all about recruiting Central New York, and I did a big show honoring Central New York student-athletes for football recently, and you can listen to that show on wakeupcalldt.com. You can download the app, too, wakeupcalldt.podbean.com/mobile. You can download that. You can just go to wakeupcalldt.com and click on the button to download the app and do it easily there. I want to thank over 94,000 downloads, which isn't even all the plays we have. It's downloads. You don't have to download it to play it. So about 100,000 people, I would safely say, you know, have listened to the show Wake Up Call over the last 4 years, and I thank you so much for that. When you are put in a position with Syracuse and recruiting in Central New York, we know how important it is, Rob, and obviously Mackie McPherson, Cam McPherson, and Riley Dixon, you know, they found their ways to Syracuse, and Nick Robinson, but there's a lot of players that have it. And Steve Adazio is a really good Syracuse recruiter. Now, he's at Boston College, but he still has those Syracuse ties. Having Paul Pasqualoni as your assistant coach makes you even more dangerous in Central New York. And because Boston College has been more focused on Central New York than Syracuse has been in the last few years, Boston College is actually ahead of Syracuse when it comes to recruiting people and taking people and keeping them there. I think Boston College has built a bigger bridge and a better bridge than Syracuse, because back in the 80s, Syracuse was about taking somebody like yourself, somebody like Tim Green. But right now, they've backed off of that and trying to rebuild that bridge if they even want to. They got to fight Boston College, and they got to fight a former assistant coach and a former head coach of Syracuse, which I think makes it dangerous. So I think that affects Syracuse recruiting-wise. But I put Syracuse to finish 6 out of 7 teams in the Atlantic Division because Dino Babers in his first year. And like we talked about, this is another offense. This is Sean Lewis and Mike Lynch's offense. Last year it was Tim Lester's. Before that it was George McDonald / Tim Lester. Before George McDonald / Tim Lester, we were looking at an offense that was being run by Nate Hackett. So Syracuse needs some time to get to this. And the funny thing is, Nate Hackett left Syracuse with Ryan Nassib running a hurry-up, no-huddle offense. And it was the best Syracuse played in the last decade. Then they ran away from it immediately with George McDonald, which made no sense whatsoever. And now they're trying to hurry up again. If they think about it like this, Rob, if Syracuse had done a hurry-up offense after Nate Hackett, with Nate Hackett, all the way through to now. We're talking about 4 years running a no-huddle, hurry-up style Orange is the New Fast offense, and we could have had a team that could rival Louisville, a team that could have been the second tier, could have been the third-best team, could have been the fourth-best team in the Atlantic, but because Dino's starting this thing over again, that's why I put Syracuse as sixth. It's not that they don't have talent. I think Brizzly Esim is one of the best kick return, punt returners in the ACC, maybe in the nation. And I think that, you know, some of the other guys, I mean, you look at running back Mo Neal is going to do a lot of good things. As a freshman, I think he can be effective. I really like Dante Strickland. I like Eric Dungy. Austin Wilson has gotten better as a quarterback. Looks more poised in the pocket. Looks more confident going down the field from what I've been able to see in minimal view that the media gets in practice. I've been able to see some good things from Austin Wilson. Cam McPherson got bigger as a tight end. He looks like a true lineman-style tight end that can block. And wide receiver Steve Ishmael, if he gets targeted more than he was because they didn't use him well last year. You got that. You got Irv Phillips, who's played running back, H-back, and now wide receiver. He's super dangerous. So, you know, I think offensively there's a lot to be said. But Syracuse has to play Clemson every year. They have to play Florida State. They have to play Louisville, which to me, those are three losses. So I find it very difficult to put them above six this year, as much as I do believe that they have a lot of talent. And obviously, I know a lot of these guys professionally and personally from offense, defense, to special teams. So, gentlemen, it's hard for me to put you at six, but prove me wrong. And at number seven, you and I both chose the same team. And as bad as people think Syracuse is going to be, Wake Forest is always worse. And so we both put Wake Forest, the Demon Deacons, at number seven. Why'd you put them there?
Wake Forest is... they're a millennial away from getting anything right and getting anything together to be a, put a competitive team on the field. I mean, Wake Forest, you know, is just... I mean, it's sad to say, but at some point, someone has to be the doormat of the league, and that happens to be Wake Forest, you know, from offense to defense, special teams to coaching. But, you know, I'm sure as a former player, it's like the players go out there and try, but, you know, they're just not getting it, you know, and it shows year in and year out, you know. I mean, you just feel bad for Wake Forest, though. You know, you have Syracuse, a spot away from Wake Forest, you know, but I just feel that Wake Forest is a start going out of the league. They have been, and nothing's changing.
You know, Wake Forest, I feel bad for Dave Clawson, because he's really trying.
Great.
You know, but this is a school that has been recruiting against NC State with Dave Doran, North Carolina with Larry Fedora, Duke and David Cutcliffe. They've been recruiting against all of them for years.
You get a great education. I mean,
you do get a great education at Wake Forest. It's a lot harder to get into you than you think. But, you know, Wake Forest, to me, it's trying to figure it out. It's trying to get these guys together and get them to play well and get them all on the same page. And it's not that I don't think Wake Forest can push some teams, but it's difficult. It's difficult to see where they're going to go from here. And I feel bad for Dave Clawson. I like that they bought into him more than Syracuse did Scott Schaefer. It would be good to see Dave be able to turn this thing around. Some people think that Wake's going to win five or six games this year. I think four, maybe five. But, you know, Wake Forest is that team that makes Syracuse look good on a bad day. And that's kind of how I see it right now, and that's kind of where we sit. Rob, we're going to go down the list. I'm going to go position by position. It's called rapid fire. So we're just going to give the top person to look out for, or the top couple people. So either one or two players start the offense at quarterback. Who's your guy? Who's your key guy, your playmaker to look out for?
We could sit here and say, they're dumb, you know. I really like Dungy and his athleticism. I said myself all the time last year, here's a kid that needs to step up. Yes, it was a very exciting, yes, he was a very talented quarterback, but you know what, he didn't play like a quarterback, he played like a running back, which got him hurt, which got him injured. So if he's learned during this offseason with a year under his belt now to be able to go out there and play like a quarterback, I think he should be the guy to step into this offense and, you know, and do well. But I don't understand the new style of offense that Babers is running. You know, it's an entirely different offense. So, is Wilson a better quarterback for this offense? You know, is Mahoney a better quarterback for this offense? You know, is Dungy a better quarterback for this offense? Yeah. We won't know until we see them play.
You know, I'm going to say that at the quarterback position, obviously, the fan favorite is Eric Dungy because he's built up a strength. His muscle is bigger. You know, he's obviously bulked up a little bit. And he can throw the ball and he can run the ball. Austin Wilson, though, in practice, has shown me some good things. From the minimal And I say minimal part of practice because in the past I was able to watch 2 hours of practice. You know, the media as a whole, we were able to be there for a couple hours. So I could tell you Austin Wilson went 5 for 7 or 10 for 14 or 7 for 14 or 11 for 14. But now, you know, I get to see a few pieces. And from the drives that I've seen with Austin Wilson, he just looks more poised. He looks comfortable in the pocket. He looks confident. He's putting his passes on the money. He's slinging it in. The ball looks like it's coming in spiral. It's coming in hard. It's being in the right place at the right time. So Austin Wilson could be somebody that would be exciting to see. He believed he should stay at Syracuse when he toyed with the idea of potentially leaving. He stayed because he thought this offense would be better for him. So I'm going to say him as like 1.5, but obviously the focus on Eric Dungy to see if he can truly lead this offense. But Dino Babers doesn't have to put all his eggs in one basket with Eric Dungy. This isn't his guy. None of these guys are his guy. So it'll be just interesting to see if Mahoney or Wilson gets an opportunity out there. And Rex Culpepper is fourth on the depth chart, but Rex is going to be somebody in the future, and I'm excited to see Rex Culpepper. At running back, who is your player to watch? Dante Strickland, Jordan Frederick, Simone Neal, or George Morris II?
I mean, right now, as I said before, this is an offense that we don't under. I mean, it's hard to tell. I mean, if I can go back and say he's going to play from last year, if it makes it off the offense they ran last year, of course I would say Jordan Frederick. He's the one who's explosive in that offense. The offense is tailored in. This is an entirely different offense that these young men have to run and have to learn. You know, but I understand that Mo Neal's been having a great, you know, great preseason leading up. You know, so I mean, but that bodes well because I had a great season leading up on my freshman year, and I am starting in the freshman. You know, so this is a good thing for Coach Babers to have. You know, with so many talented running backs on the board, you know, for him to go on, to be able to, you know, to pick and choose what fits his situation. Right now, I'd have to say with Jordan Frederick, for the simple fact that he has experience of playing all the time last year. But you know, the noise I hear from training camp, Mo Neal is making a lot of splash from training camp. And Strickland is also another good running back you can throw in here. So, I mean, right now, if I had to say one, I'd say Jordan Frederick.
Okay, so you have Jordan Fredericks, who found his way down the depth chart, went back up post-spring. Dante Strickland, to me, you know, for the speed and what they want to do, he was an H-back last year. And, you know, that wide receiver running back hybrid. And I think that going into this season, the type of offense that Dino Babers wants to run, and watching Bowling Green in their bowl game that they had, you know, that every Syracuse fan was paying attention to the night before that we...
They got crushed.
Bowling Green?
Yes.
But look at, you know, when you look at that game, and you look at what type of offense and what the expectations are of that offense, you know, people are looking at different games, and, you know, to take it out of the bowl game, the MAC championship game,
Okay. That's
the one that a lot of Syracuse fans, that's what I was referring to that they were watching.
Right.
So because Dino Babers and his staff, not a part of the bowl game. So there we go. Rob correcting me while we're doing a live show. Fine, I don't care. But the MAC championship game is what I'm talking about. The night before we officially found out about Dino Babers. So Dante Strickland, for the offense that I've seen, Dante fits this. His speed, his ability, catching the ball quickly, you know, catching the ball over the middle, 2 yards, being in the backfield, you know, being out wide and taking a quick pass in the backfield and taking it from there. I think Dante's the guy to watch, but I'm excited about Mo Neal, and my mind is telling me Mo Neal. I think I had a dream about Mo Neal on the field doing some pretty awesome things, so I'm going to call that a premonition.
I'm glad you elaborated about on the field.
A dream about Mo Neal. When Mo Neal and I was talking, so he could get a good laugh about it. But I just came in, I'm like, I had a dream about Mo Neal, and then I just dropped the mic.
You elaborated on it.
Yeah, I elaborated. So I had a dream that Mo Neal was doing some good things out of the backfield and, you know, catching the ball.
Good recovery.
As well as running the ball. Thank you. So I'm very proud of myself. At wide receiver, there's going to be 4 wide receivers in this spread set. So what receivers are you looking to? I'm going to give you the long list, and you can tell me who you pick out of this based on experience. And I know that we haven't seen the offense yet, but just based on what we know. Steve Ishmael, Adley Anoisi, Tyler Gilfus, Irvin Phillips, Clay Austin, Tyrone Perkins, who's been moved there from H-back, Grizzly Esteem, Jacob Hill, who is a walk-on running back who did some good things last year, is now a wide receiver at 5'6", but he fits this offense. The shorter players like Darren Sproles fit the offense that Dino Babers is running. Sean Avant, Alvin Cornelius, Jamal Custis, and Kentarius Womack, who came in as an athlete, quarterback, wide receiver. So all of those wide receivers that I've named, who are the ones that stick out to you?
I mean, the ones that are going to stick out are the ones we know, household names. You know, Steve Bishop, Snell, Grizzly Esteen, you know, and Irv Phillips. You know, those are the playmakers from last year also.
Yeah.
And
I think give me a fourth. Would your fourth be Alvin Cornelius? Would you put him in there? Had some good catches so far at fall camp.
You'd have to throw him in there for having a good camp right now.
Or Jacob Hill, he's a dangerous kid too.
We can speculate all we want.
Jamal Custis looks the part.
We said we know the pedigree, or we know the background, we know the resume of the first three mentioned. You know, we know what they're capable of doing.
Yeah.
We're trying to second guess what the other guys are doing because they're young guys, especially coming into a new offense. So it's hard to say, it's hard to predict. I can tell you what, you know, Ishmael or Irvin Phillips, you know, they're going to give you, they're going to bring to the table, you know, but it's hard to predict what these other guys are going to do because they haven't been put in that situation as of yet.
I'm excited to see Alvin Cornelius in a second opportunity to be a leader. Jamal Custis, I'm excited to see Syracuse utilize him because he was utilized sparingly his entire time at Syracuse so far. But he's 6'5", 224 pounds, looks the part. And, you know, Jacob Hill, I'm excited because he's small, but he's one of those guys that I just see speeding out of the backfield, going across the middle, catching a 4-yard pass and taking on him. So I'm excited about seeing that. And then obviously the usual suspects, Grizzlies team, Irvin Phillips and Steve Ishmael. At tight ends, we've seen Kendall Moore, we've seen Josh Paris, P.J. Batten's really not been out there much at all. Cam McPherson, Maggie McPherson's younger brother who played center for Syracuse. And your coach, his grandson, Cam McPherson, put on some good weight. He is the biggest tight end they've had in a long time, and he caught some passes over his shoulder from Austin Wilson. Would Cam McPherson be your guy to watch a tight end from? This is a very injury-laden, inexperienced position for Syracuse.
I mean, for me, it's more that Josh Paris can stay healthy. You know, I think he has the potential and athleticism to do well at the tight end spot. But, I mean, Cam McPherson, it's hard to understand someone playing with heart, someone playing with pride, someone playing with desire for the simple fact that their grandfather, you know, was the head coach of Syracuse University, and Coach McPherson. You know, Cam McPherson's from Syracuse, so not only is he playing Syracuse University football, but he's playing for the pride of not just the university, but his family, his hometown, his friends. And that's something that someone who's never experienced before, you know, they can't understand. So you play with a little bit extra, you know, pride, a little bit extra, you know, it's that dog that's in. So that's something I understand myself because I'm a Syracuse born and raised guy here myself. So when I went out there every single day, I play with that extra pride and that, you know, that power and that passion that he's given me. So it could be Cam's position to run with and Cam's position to do well.
You know, and I think that we've been hearing about Cam McPherson last year. You know, I was told in practice that he was consistently improving, but to actually see him in practice, see what he looks like, see him catch the ball and do some good things, I'm excited about Cam McPherson this year, so he'd be my guy to pick. But don't count out Kendall Moore and Josh Paris. But I think that if Cam comes out first couple games and he does well against Colgate, Louisville, and whatnot, it might be his to run off with. Offensive line, at left tackle, Michael Lasker has had some experience at right tackle, but he's a guy that wasn't trusted. He was inconsistent. At left guard, Aaron Roberts could have taken this job last year, but it stayed with Nick Robinson. And at center, Jason Emmerich, who when Mackey was here, I thought Jason was good. I was hoping he'd get an opportunity, and now he's on the watch list for best center in the country. And then right guard, Omari Palmer's played on the right side, right guard and right tackle. And Jamar McGluster at right tackle is a guy who we haven't really seen a lot from. He's been used in a rotation. And behind these guys, you have Evan Adams, Colin Byrne, Andreas Jure, Cody Conway, who all came on, and Sammy Clausman, who all came in last year with Joe Adam. Joe Adam, the one thing he said he would regret as the offensive line coach at Syracuse is bringing in five offensive linemen, all five that they wanted, and all at a different position, and never be able to coach them and be able to show you what they're capable of. And unfortunately, that came true, and he's not here to coach these guys. But I think the offensive line is another question mark because you haven't been able to lead on McGluster or Lasker, and they're anchoring the line on the edges right now, and the left tackle, arguably the most important position on the offensive line. I'm very wary about left tackle and right tackle right now.
Yeah, left tackle is one of the most important positions in football. That's why I mean, like, not just an offensive lineman, but in football alone, left tackle is one of the highest paid positions in the NFL. For the simple fact that it's the most, because you're picking the blind side of most right-handed quarterbacks. Right. So this is a time for these young men, last year especially, to step up and show dominance at the position. You can make a name for yourself right now at Syracuse by going in the offensive line and just being a dominant player, a dominant, consistent player. You know, Mari Palmer, he's been there a while also. You know, it's time, you know, you're not a freshman, sophomore anymore. You know, you're past that stage. Now your body should be developed, your mind should be developed to go out there and be a dominant player in that position. It's not about just playing the position. It's about being dominant in the position. I was a good running back because I was dominant at the position, not because I was a good player. Yes, I was a very talented and good player, but I would dominate games. It's time for these guys to go out there and dominate games and show what they're capable of doing. And that's how you establish yourself, and that's how you get the recognition you need to be, to go to that next level and climb the ranks and compete with the, you know, Florida States and the Clemsons, you know, and the Louisvilles.
Rapid fire going down the defensive side of things. We talked about the defensive line, so we don't have to really spend any time there from defensive end to end, nose tackle and defensive tackle. I would say that Josh Black, a true freshman, is someone to look out for. Kendall Coleman is someone to potentially look out for. So guys like that, I would kind of keep on my list and in the back of your mind. Kenneth Ruff, we'll see what he can do, but the most important people, the players that I expect the most out of this year on the defensive line are Caden Samuels and Stephen Clark, because both at nose tackle did some good things. I think Syracuse is best served if they keep one at nose tackle and move one to defensive tackle and have, you know, Caden Stephen or Stephen Caden, vice versa, but have them on the interior and then just worry about your edges and how you're going to figure that out. That's kind of how I look at it. But we've talked a lot about the line, so we'll go straight to the linebacker core, the middle of the defense of this Tampa 2 zone. Weak side linebacker Paris Bennett has been moved up above Marquise Hodge, who suffered some injuries, did some good things here and there. Shai Cullen is a redshirt freshman that is here and has an opportunity, and he is currently third string at weak side linebacker. And then Elric Perry, who is a redshirt junior. Paris Bennett, Marquise Hodge at weak side linebacker. Who's the one that sticks out to you? And Paris kind of finished things off last year, but it says something about him, I think, that he helped through the spring into the fall as keeping that job over a healthy Marquise Hodge.
No, but the thing there about Marquise Hodge is he started as a true freshman. You know, so it says a lot about the young man, his experience and his ability. You know, injuries, you know, prevented, allowed Paris to be able to get in there and get some experience and get some time also. So they're bookends. They're a lot like me and Michael Owens. At any given point, either one of those two that you can put in the game, and situationally, they'll be great. They'd be great for your defense. But they definitely are the two top-tier linebackers at the outside spot.
Center of the defense and the quarterback of the defense.
That's an easy one.
And arguably the best player on Syracuse's defense is middle linebacker Zaire Franklin. He is followed by Troy Henderson and Kyle Kleinberg, who's caught some passes on offense as well. But I don't think that we can say enough about Zaire Franklin. He started as a true freshman as well. He was expected to be a leader. As a sophomore, his team chose him to be one of the four captains. He represented Syracuse at the ACC kickoff last year. He represented Syracuse at the ACC kickoff this year with a different head coach. So from Schaefer to Dino Babers, they see Zaire Franklin and see him similarly to think he's a leader, think he's the quarterback of the defense, think he's the one that should be there in that prominent leadership role, and have chosen him to represent the defense to the entire ACC for 2 years going. He's only a junior, so I don't think that there's much argument to say that Zaire Franklin is our guy at middle linebacker and at linebacker as a whole, and for the defense for that matter.
I mean, get an argument for me, man. Now, leading that young man, he's just a very charismatic, very, very well-spoken, very outgoing and passionate guy about what he believes in, you know, and he believes in hard work, he believes in going out there and representing the, I call it the Syracuse brand. You know, that's really what it is. Syracuse University football team is a brand. You know, and Zaire Franklin fits that brand and does all and says all the right things that you need to do to be successful at Syracuse.
Strong side linebacker Jonathan Thomas, who is a junior, has moved up the ranks here. Ted Taylor, who transferred into Syracuse, is right behind him. Then Eric Anthony, who used to be a DB. And then you have Terrell Drayton. Jonathan Thomas, this is somebody who I'm excited to see what he can do. He's been utilized in rotation, but just like Paris Bennett,
Dino Babers believes that this guy is starter worthy, and I think that this is maybe the biggest question mark between, you know, Paris Bennett, Marquise Hodges, Zaire Franklin from weak side to middle. When you look at the strong side, Jonathan Thomas and Ted Taylor is maybe your biggest question mark on what they can be consistently, but I can say that I'm pleasantly excited about Jonathan Thomas and seeing Ted Taylor, I'm sure, in rotation.
I'm excited about everything happening, but as we said before, you know, like, time will tell. Like, you know, we're predicting right now how talented and how good these guys are going to be, you know. I look back and I think no one predicted I was going to be as talented as I was when I played, you know, but I think these guys have huge upside, you know. But as I said, that first game when you turn the lights on, some guys who are very talented in practice, you turn the lights on, they get that camera behind them and it becomes real. Now they get short legs, they get short arms, they get shorter breath, and they don't perform as well. So, you know, it takes a lot of quick experience for athletes to be successful. You know, right now these guys don't have experience. So, as I said, just give them time, and which they don't have a lot of right now, but then time's going to tell how successful Terry's going to be this year.
But the cornerbacks, Corey Winfield, who has moved over from wide receiver in the past, Wayne Morgan is behind him, and Christopher Frederick, who came on the team last year. And then we have Cordell Hudson and Juwan Dowles, who are both redshirt sophomores together. Who sticks out to you for this? I mean, mine easily is Corey Winfield, an interception in the first game of the season last year. This guy has great hands. He showed why he came in as a wide receiver. I think he was under the radar. I think that he's not going to get respect from Florida State and Clemson, so I think that bodes well for Syracuse. Cordell Hudson, Juwan Dowles, I see them as kind of the same right now, waiting to see who's going to take over. And Wayne Morgan's been an underperformer, so if it's up to me at corner, I'm saying Cordell Hudson and Juwan Dowles put together maybe make a good corner. You know, their talents together maybe give you what you need on one side. And then on the other side, Corey Winfield, I can't argue with putting him as a starter.
Yeah, Corey Winfield is definitely the best corner. I mean, I'm so not used to hearing Lane Julian Wiggum. It seems like he's been there for 10 years for the past years in Syracuse. You know, but Corey Winfield is definitely the best corner right now. Should be the one they definitely go to in their main stalwarts.
Free safety Antoine Courtney, followed by Chauncey Sism, and strong safety Kylan Whitner, who played as a freshman and as a sophomore, came on late for the team in recruitment. Rodney Williams behind him, who has been talked about a lot but has suffered injuries, and Davon Ellison, Joe Stenard after that. So who sticks out? You know, free safety, if Zaire Franklin's the best player on Syracuse's defense, I would argue that Antoine Courtney is the second best. And then Kylan Whitner, I'm very excited. He was just on Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora. We just did an interview. And at the strong safety position, I mean, this man went from not getting a lot of offers, not being talked about, nobody knowing who he is, flying in last minute to come on the Syracuse's team, to getting out there as a freshman, who I'm sure many people thought if anybody was going to redshirt, it would be him. And now he's a starter at strong safety. So I'm very excited for Kylan Whitner. And Antoine Courtney, like I said, I consider him the second best defender on Syracuse's team.
I can definitely see Courtney and Whitner being the stalwarts of that Syracuse secondary, where especially the defense, they're going to play that Tampa 2 defense, and those guys are going to have to sit home. They're going to play smart football. Nothing's going to have to be able to get behind them in order to make big plays. So those two are going to have one heck of a, not just talented athletic, but smart ear playing smart football. Because not only are they going to have to protect the run, they're going to have to also protect the corners in the pass also. So those two definitely are the two best at that position with Syracuse right now.
And special teams to go down the line. I mean, we don't have to. There's no shock here. Cole Murphy's going to be the kicker. He did well. I mean, this is, you love to see walk-ons make a team and be as good as he is. And I actually voted him to be the kicker for the ECC with Roberto Aboyo now on the Tampa Bay Bucks leaving Florida State. But Cole Murphy, a kicker. Sterling Hoffrichter, we're going to finally get to see him as a punter on the team. But he's a kicker and a punter from Armwood High School down in Florida. I'm just excited. Sterling Hoffrichter, number 10, is going to be out there. And then your long snapper, Matt Keller, came in last year, did a hell of a job. Your holder, Zach Mahoney, and Sterling Hoffrichter, and kick return, punt return. No surprise, Grizzly esteem. But they haven't named anybody else that's going to be back there, and that in at least in kick return, to have a two-player set. They haven't named the other player. So you would imagine one of the third or fourth best running back might get an opportunity to go back there like it did last year and be able to play a little bit. But any words on special teams or any thoughts on that, or maybe who you think should be back there with Grizzly?
I think Cole Murphy and Grizzly's team would be the biggest game changer on special teams for Syracuse this year. The simple fact that people have to understand is offense, defense, special teams. it's three parts of the football that makes football successful, and that's one third of the part, and that's a huge part. Grizzlies seem to have a breakout year this year. It's over the market.
Yeah, and coming from Rob Drummond, I could not agree more, because people forget all the time special teams puts you in a good position on offense and puts you in a good position on defense, or they could do the opposite. People forget field position is one of the most important, if not the most important thing on the field, and you have to thank your punters, your kickers, and your returners for the job that they do back there.